This show is for December 16th, which is a Sunday.
Dancing through the snow.
Thank you. We're getting close to Christmas. This is show number 260 for, as I said, December 16th. My name is Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, here with the gamer tag of E, who sits in with me frequently, more times than not.
On a one-horse open sleigh.
Is this the last show of the season?
It could be.
Should it be?
It might very well be, unless you actually do come to my New Year's party.
So you're off for the rest of the year, right?
In six hours, I'm on vacation.
You are on vacation. I don't know if I'm going to do shows for the rest of the year. Last year we did the big round table. Well, we'll talk about the end of the show. Let's talk about what's cool going on now.
Moving on.
We'll talk about that at the end of the show. Chock full show for you, as you can tell by the file size and the length of said file. We've got four big interviews. I've got the scary math guys who invented TruSkill.
Yes.
And they work for Microsoft Research, and I call them the scary math guys because they come in here and completely fill up my whiteboard with sigma over mu and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, I believe them when they tell me things.
Yeah, so they're coming over. I've got those guys in the house. I've got the couple of the guys from Grip Shift. They work on Grip Shift, which is one of the arcade titles that went out this week.
Cool.
On Xbox Live Arcade. I was allowed into Bungie.
Woot. That's the first time in quite a while.
Right, but I wasn't allowed into Bungie, meaning I had to stay literally out in the foyer. We did this.
Did you get to go into that one conference room?
Right,
that's
the one on the right-hand side. The little one. So I went over there and I met with Brian, who works on the community over there. So he and I caught up, just talking about the map packs which are out this week, and
right.
And we reinvigorated a long-standing grudge match challenge that you will talk about during that interview.
Oh boy!
And then finally, I have Jesse Alexander, who is one of the is the executive producer, writers. He does Heroes.
Well, he was the executive producer, but I could be wrong.
I can't. He's a producer. He writes it, so he clearly, with the writer's strike, he's not doing that.
He's
right
the Heroes guy.
Right. So he's the Heroes guy. He's also a big fan of the show, big fan of Xbox. And
just like Will Wheaton.
Just like, which we'll talk about in a minute. But you have to listen to Jesse interview because I'm giving away probably one of the coolest prizes I've given away in a while, other than the Major Nelson headset. I am giving away an Xbox 360 as well as an HD DVD player, and they have been signed by the cast of Heroes. And you see, you're looking at it.
I'm looking at it. It's very cool, and I'm wishing there was some way I could snag it for myself.
And I think I'm going to throw in a copy of Heroes, the first season of Heroes, on HD DVD. I have to.
When do I get a copy?
You borrowed mine, and you had it for 6 months, and that was the end of that.
Okay.
So that's kind of the show for today, in addition to the random babblings and musings that E and I will make you suffer through.
That's a good way to describe it.
But first of all, you kind of talked about Child's Play. Child's Play was this week. Why don't you explain Child's Play?
Child's Play was awesome. For those of you who do not know what the Child's Play charity is, it's a charity that was started by the gentleman, Gabe, Tycho, etc., over at Penny Arcade.
Yep.
The idea being that, hey, people are always talking in the press about, you know, oh, games make people do horrible things, gamers live in their parents' basement, etc. Let's prove that gamers can do something positive.
Right.
Child's Play Charity is about primarily donating video games to children's hospitals so that kids who are in there trying to get better have something to brighten up their day and pass the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we raised, at the charity dinner, I think over $200,000.
Actually, it was over $250,000.
On top of, they already had, I think, 600,000 in pledges going into that.
Right.
So we're already close to $1 million for this year. It's a great, great charity. Encourage people to take a look at it. I think you put it in your link dump a week or two ago. We should do that again. Childsplaycharity.org.
Yep.
The charity dinner was phenomenal because we got to see a bunch of people we know pretty well, but we don't normally see in tuxedos and kilts and suits and dresses.
Top hat and tails?
Yeah. We saw a little bit of everything. And apparently gamers do clean up okay.
Yeah, the so this was, and I also want to also point out that, you know, even if you're not in the Seattle area, wherever you are, Child's Play is a global effort. You can just go to the website and you can make a donation, and it will help out. You'll see the list of hospitals that it helps out. So there's hospitals in Australia and Canada and Europe and so forth, of course, in the U.S. So you should really. If you're not in the Seattle area and you're just wherever you are, you can help out. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And this particular event, it kind of caps it all off. As you said, it's a dinner. It's an auction. There's a silent auction before, which is, for those of you that don't know what a silent auction is, E will explain it.
it essentially, so there was a big, I guess you call it a foyer.
Let's just talk about where this was first. It was at the Washington State Convention Center, which is a building I hate.
It's a huge building. It's the only place you can handle some events, like SakuraCon was there last year.
PAX
was there. It's a huge place.
Well, I love the event. I don't like the building because it's the structural version of a Rubik's Cube. You can't get from point A to point B quickly.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird the way you come up one set of escalators and you're on the wrong side of the building.
Right.
And there's no obvious signs that you have to go, you know, go over to the Starbucks and take a left and go down the hallway
and around the corner by the restrooms and
yeah.
But it's Washington State Convention Center. So it was there. I actually texted you because I couldn't find my way in. I'm like, I hate this building.
See, I've been there more than you have, I think. So I actually know it pretty well by this point. But outside of where we were having the dinner, they had the auction set up.
Right.
And they had, it was great. They had, you know, people roaming around with appetizers and champagne, and there were wet bars. But all the way kind of surrounding the room, they had all these different items you could bid on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was artwork, there were gadgets, there were, you know,
games.
Most of the stuff was autographed by whoever made it, donated
the developers,
it, whatever.
And so forth.
And all sorts of really cool, you know, gaming collectible stuff.
Did you bid on anything?
I didn't bid on anything in the silent auction. I bid on some things at the live auction.
Oh, we'll talk about the live auction in a second.
Yeah,
but the silent auction, I bid on a few things, like being a character in Fable. Because since I've been doing this show, I have asked pretty much everybody at MGS, you know, our internal game studios, including Bungie. I'm like, I just want to be a voice in your game. That's all I want to do.
Well,
I want to be in the credits. I want to be a voice in the game.
One of the items that was raffled off last year was getting your voice in Halo 3.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the Easter eggs in the game, is the red versus blue guys have their voices in one of the levels.
Because they bought it.
Yeah, and I think that was about, off the top of my head, I think that went for about $10,000.
Yeah, so, I mean, I absolutely want to, I want to be in, so developers and publishers out there, come on, somebody send me an email, major@xbox.com. I'll just read a line, that's all I want.
Wouldn't they rather have me?
Or E, or Andy.
Could we, like, be at each other's throats in the hallway of some video?
So let me know. We're happy to do that. I actually bid on the Fable one, and I got outbid.
How much did it go for?
I don't even remember. I bid, and I just know I didn't get it.
So the silent auction was from 6:30 to 7:30.
Right.
And everyone was mingling and taking pictures and, yeah, oh, hi, haven't seen you in a while, right, that kind of thing. Dinner started at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And basically,
what did you have for
dinner? I had the steak.
I had the ravioli.
My date had the pumpkin ravioli. I tried it out. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, that's what I had.
That was good. But steak was pretty good. I wasn't expecting a, you know, phenomenal steakhouse steak.
Right.
It was good, but the ravioli was amazing. And the auction was going on while people were eating.
Right.
Dinner was about a 2-hour thing with the auction going on all throughout. It got pretty energetic towards the end of the night. It started out, I think the first auction item that got modified on the fly was the Valve package.
It was the Halo package, wasn't it?
I thought it was Valve and then Bungie?
No, because the Valve one was the special one, and the Bungie one was like second or third.
Okay, so there were multiple Halo-related items for auction.
Right.
One of them was... regular listeners may remember, there was a lot of press the week before Halo 3 shipped. We sent out a limited number of duffel bags that had people's gamer tags on them, and inside was essentially one of everything Halo.
I got one of those.
There was,
and I gave a bunch of stuff away to the team.
Yeah, I didn't get one. Shut up. There was a console with your gamer tag on it, one of the Halo special editions. pretty much every imaginable piece of Halo swag was right. stuffed in there. This was like a full-size military duffel bag
right.
full of Halo items.
And but the bag that they auctioned off actually was that, but way better. Because they stuffed it with even more stuff.
Right. And then once the bidding had, you know, just about topped out at I don't remember how many thousands of dollars, somebody, I think it was Frankie,
yep.
might have been somebody else, walked up and said, hey, guys, tell you what, we're going to throw something else in. Whoever wins this auction, we're going to give them recon armor.
Which is, recon armor is?
There is one of the things you can do in Halo 3 is unlock different bits of armor to decorate your character.
And how do you unlock
to control them? How it looks. You unlock most of them through playing the game. And then there's recon armor, which
right.
is only a handful of people outside of Bungie have it. It's mostly Bungie employees.
Right.
And everyone wants to know, how do you get recon? It's still not publicly known.
Right.
Everyone wants it. People are constantly emailing, messaging, how do I get recon? How do I get recon? And that they threw that in, and the bidding basically started all over.
It almost doubled.
Yeah,
it was
crazy.
Insane. Yeah, I was sitting at the table, actually. Well, we'll talk about who was sitting at my table after you finish this.
Okay, so that was one of the crazy items. Then another one, and this was one of the ones I did bid on for a while, was a big Valve package.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a giant canvas, the orange box logo.
Right.
With, you know, Half-Life and Portal and everything
right.
on there. That was
Team
beautiful.
Fortress too, yeah.
Would have looked phenomenal in my office. A lifetime Steam subscription that with access to every single item on Steam.
Right.
And that was getting bid up, and that was getting bid up. And I think I stuck into around $2,500 and then gave up.
Then you folded.
But one of the things they threw in, kind of the same idea that Bungie did, was they came up and said, you know what? We're going to throw in a tour of the offices and one of the giant weighted companion cubes.
Enough said.
And I
at that point the crowd went bananas.
Yeah, but it went for so much. I really wanted it, but I'll confess, even for charity, I didn't want it that bad.
Yes, there were people wheeling crazy ass money.
Yes,
like $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. I was like, ooh, what's going on here?
Yeah, and I mean, total over $250,000. Obviously, people were very generous.
Right.
There were some great items donated. It was a lot of fun.
So that was the evening. Now, I was sitting at one of the tables. You were sitting a couple of tables behind me. I was sitting kind of towards the front. I don't know why
right.
I was sitting in front, but okay.
You're at the special table.
I was at the adult table, I guess, which
sure,
of course, made you at the kids' table.
The kids' table's where the fun is.
Yeah. So I was sitting there, and just as the bidding is starting, I go in, and I sit down at my table, at table 3, and to my right is Brian from Bungie with his wife, and Frankie from Bungie with his wife, and a few other people, and so forth, and Robert from Penny Arcade. And directly across from me is Will Wheaton, which is, you know him as...
Most people are going to remember Wesley from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Right. But he has, if you go up to IMDb, and I'll put a link to this, he has got a lit... Oh, this is not Cooley.
What?
He's had a voice in Rainbow Six Lockdown. We were just talking about how I he's had a voice in Grand Theft Auto Vice Cities, Ghost Recon, Advanced Warf. Oh, this is not cool.
Gra 2.
Wes, I need your I just call them Wes. Will, I need your look at me. I need your agent because this is not cool. He was in San Andreas.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's of course, you know, like you said, a lot of people know him from Star Trek The Next Generation.
It's like he's kind of successful or something.
Yeah. So this is, he was in GR2, EverQuest.
He was in Teen Titans.
So anyway, so Will's sitting across from me. And I'm a big fan. Clearly I didn't know the extent of his resume. And we're kind of all chatting throughout the thing, but you know, I'm sitting across from him, so I can't just lean over and introduce myself. So what happens in this day and age is I'm Twittering. I said, you know, I throw up to my Twitter.
This.
I said, I'm sitting across from Will Wheaton. Well, unbeknownst to me, he's Twittering that he's sitting with me at roughly the same time. So it was just like the geek nirvana. Now, what happened was, I'm not tracking everyone's Twitters on my phone, but I get an email from somebody sitting in the operations center, the Zoc.
Right.
Who they're watching my Twitter, and they're like, dude, you're sitting at the table with Will Wheaton. He just Twittered it. And I'm like, I know, but he Twittered it. And I went and shared him on my phone. I'm like, oh, my God, this is funny. So after we're all done, he and I finally catch up. We're like, dude, I'm a big fan. He's like, I'm a big fan. So we exchange business cards. In fact, I have his business card right here. See, I'll give that to you.
Oh, very classy.
So he and I exchanged, and we're going to, you know, I sent him a friend's request and so on and so forth. So
is that his PGP key on the back?
I believe it is.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? That's a geek.
Will's a true geek. Yes.
So it was just, it was really great to chat with him and really just catch up on some stuff. So we're gonna be gaming. So maybe, you know, and I want also want to be clear. I mean, the Halo maps came out on Tuesday. Every single night, IME. Hey, you want to play the new maps tonight?
Oh no, I'm too tired.
Dude, I've been a little busy this week.
I'm a little busy.
Every single, have I not?
Yeah, at least a couple of times. I don't know about every night, but last night I was
so we're hopefully we can play them maybe this weekend or whenever you get a chance, because you're going to be out. Maybe I'll bring Will in and we can play. So, but it was just a funny, the whole, and I put a post up about this. The whole concept of we were tweeting about each other was just funny as hell.
I think my favorite part, I mean, that's good enough, but the fact that somebody in the Zoc
right.
sees that you two are twittering about each other and emails you,
right.
Could we be any more connected?
Yeah, I know. This is all happening literally in real time during dinner.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it was really fun. So Child's Play was a blast. As he said, it raised, you know, over $250,000 at that event alone. So it was really fun. If you don't get a chance to, you know, look at the photos up on Flickr. there's been quite a bit of conversation. Usually there's a conversation around my wardrobe. And there's been quite a bit of conversation around my pants this time.
There has?
Yeah.
Okay, I've missed that. I'll have to go check.
There's a flicker of me and a wide shot of the table that shows Will to the left.
I know the picture you're talking about, but I missed all the
right,
comments.
And I'm kind of looking at Gabe and Tycho on stage, and Will is there. So you can kind of see where we're sitting. And at that point, we hadn't met yet.
Right.
And so there, you can see my pants, and they were, I liked them.
People didn't like your pants?
No. Okay.
See, this is the one thing where, as much as I'm a Flickr fan, I've used it for years, I have a Flickr Pro account,
right.
Just, I love the way tagging works on Facebook.
Right.
I have a bunch of pictures these days that are on Facebook and not on Flickr. Although I think I posted my Child's Play pictures to both.
A lot of people did.
So.
All right, so that's Child's Play 2007. Congratulations to Gabe and Tycho, and we need to, I need to go over there.
Little Leaven K2 wants to chat with you.
Everybody, you know, so we always have the Xbox on in the background when we're recording this. And everybody sends me chat requests.
I get them too.
What do you got? I mean, first of all, I'm recording a show, but they don't know that. So right. That's not fair. But you know, I'm just not going to accept a random chat request.
I never do. And I think we've talked about it before. It's just, who would?
Yeah.
That's just kind of odd.
Yeah, so I actually have in my bio, you know, I can't, so a lot of people ask me, hey Major, do you know how you can get the recon armor in Halo? Oh, go over to Bungie and find out. I don't know. It's not my game.
Yep.
so we'll, getting a lot of messages, especially with the, now let's talk about Inside Xbox.
Well, as long as we're on the message subject, I'd like to thank you for asking everyone to message me about finishing BioShock.
Did you?
I've gotten probably, I'm going to say, a good 300 to 400 messages on the subject.
Game of the year.
So I did finish Assassin's Creed. I mean, we'll come to games we're playing later, right. But I finished that, so I now can move on to something else. So
right.
No, I can.
Okay.
I just haven't decided what yet.
So I want to talk about Inside Xbox, which is a new feature that's on the Xbox dashboard. This is a feature that, depending upon what region you're in, you may or may not see it. It's on the Xbox Live Blade. It clearly says Inside Xbox, and if you're in the U.S., you can punch in there and you can see I'm doing videos for that. I'm talking about specific things to the U.S., and that's why it's not being used internationally.
Now, the thing we should be clear about is just because there's nothing there in your country right now doesn't mean it's not coming.
Yep.
So I know lots of other territories have said, oh, we're working on it. We'll have it next year.
Right.
But, you know, they've got to get cameras and production gear and people.
If they want to do video.
Yeah.
So that's a new feature that may be coming to your region soon. And if you're in the U.S., you can see some of the videos that I'm doing there. If you have any feedback on the videos, send me an email, major@xbox.com. I may start doing, maybe I'll bring you into do Xbox 101. I'll wheelie in to do Xbox 101.
The world needs me on video.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So they barely need me on video.
I wasn't going to go there, but yeah.
So here's an interesting little production point. We actually have a studio down the hall that we built for this, and we have to shoot it in HD, and then we compress it down. And a lot of people have asked, well, how come it's not in HD on the console? Simply because it's streaming. You don't have to download it. And does anybody stream HD? I think a couple people do.
You can, but it depends on not everyone's definition of what is HD and what isn't.
Right,
it's the same,
right,
number one. And number two, if you do stream it in HD, then not everyone's going to be able to watch it.
Right, because there's a lot of people out there that may, and for specifically in the North America, that may have DSL that can't handle the connection. We know some people that are on dual-channel ISDN, don't we?
Yes, we do. And by doing it the way we do it, it looks reasonably good and is available to the maximum number of people in that region.
Right, so that's kind of why you're not getting, and you don't want me in HD, you really don't. Let's be clear. Yeah.
I'm not even sure I want to be sitting across the room.
Right, likewise. So that maybe I should wear those pants in question.
Hey, it's KP.
So
hi, KP.
You're looking out the office window.
He's going to lunch.
People who no one knows who they are. Let's continue on here. We've got some interviews going up. You want to talk about a couple of other things? Maybe on the other side of the interviews, we'll talk about the NPD numbers.
Yeah.
And we have we'll talk about some HD DVDs that you bought.
I have more to buy too.
And then we'll talk about the HD DVD that I actually have here in my office. So right now we're gonna stop. I'm gonna roll in. I've got four interviews back to back to back to back that I think you're gonna enjoy. Let's start right now. Grip Shift is available on the Xbox Live Arcade this week, and I have with me here Mario Winans, is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. And I have Josh Ruffo from She. And you guys are all the way from New Zealand.
All the way.
So welcome to rainy Seattle.
Thank you.
You had to leave your summer to come to our winter.
It was very warm and very sunny, and here it is very wet right now.
Yeah, it's everything that's not. But you have your game release this week, so first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Must feel great to have that game finally out there.
Yeah, it's the team's been working very hard for a long time, so it's good to see it up on the store.
Yeah, so let's talk about the title. Grip Shift is available now on the Xbox Live Arcade for 800 points. It's a fairly beefy game. I think it's like 148 megs. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty close to whatever the maximum limit of 150 is. So,
but a lot of people have already downloaded the demo and purchased it. But I want to talk about what's the style of the game. It's a racing game. How would you describe this game?
That's a very good question. I guess we describe it as a driving platformer. Okay. So it sort of mixes in driving elements. You know, you're in a car, you're driving around high speed. But at the same time, there's a lot of platform elements in there as well. There's different roads, different islands, different jump pads, teleporters, crushes, different traps. It's all taking place high above the ground. So definitely a sense of jumping around high speed.
So if you fall off, you're pretty much dead.
If you fall off, you have to restart from the last safe point that you're on. So,
wow. There's single player and there's multiplayer, correct?
Correct. There are 120 different challenge mode levels, each of which has multiple objectives. But on top of that, there's also a race mode, which is four-player online, as well as a deathmatch mode as well.
Okay.
So there's a few different ways in which people can engage with the game.
Now, you shipped the game this week, and again, like I say, congratulations. But I want to step back a little bit. How long did it take you to develop this game? When did you come up with the idea? And tell me, let's walk through the development process for some of our listeners.
Well, it's actually a game that's been through a couple of different evolutions now. Originally, it was developed for the PlayStation Portable, and we released it back in September 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've taken it to PlayStation 3 and made it available as a download there. But really, over all of this time, we've been taking the consumer feedback, making changes, making improvements, making additions, and really over the last year have been working on making this live arcade version and trying to make it, I guess, what we call the definitive version of Grip Shift.
The ultimate version.
The ultimate version of Grip Shift, yes.
What are some of the differences? You talked about the PSP version, the PS3 version, the Xbox. I mean, are there more levels? Have you tweaked the weapons? Have you tweaked... Talk to me a little bit about that.
I think there's really improvements across the board compared to the versions that have come previously. Certainly, we've continued to tweak and improve the graphics. We've continued to tweak the controls and make it as intuitive and easy as possible. Fine-tune the levels. We've added a bunch of new weapons for this version. In the other versions, there's only really three or four weapons. And now we have around a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really been about adding more depth to the gameplay and making it really smooth, really exciting.
you develop for the Xbox Live Arcade, which is just like I guess with the PS3, you had a downloadable version, but so obviously you guys are banking on the digital delivery. Mm-hmm. As opposed to making the disc like you did for the PSP, which as developers, what do you think of that? Is that the future? Or is there a specific niche case for that, or what's your theory on that?
I think it's a future.
Okay, good.
I think the digital distribution offers some very interesting possibilities for developers. I don't think the retail space is going away anytime soon. Certainly, when you take into account that what can be delivered over a digital platform is much smaller in terms of a footprint than what you can get on a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But I think increasingly we're going to see some very exciting products in the space, and it really is easier for a developer to get to the point where they can have enough technology, enough experience, and the right relationships in place to actually get something available as a download as compared to doing a retail product. You certainly need to have enough skills and experience and the funding to be able to complete something that's of high quality, but there are several barriers that you avoid by going to a download.
When you look at when you look back and you look at the other versions that you've made, I assume this is the case, but it wasn't just a matter of, let's see, we've got the game here, let's just go file, export, Xbox 360 version, and then you're done, right? I mean, there's a lot of work going involved. Can you outline some of that?
I wish we had a tool that could do that. I think every different hardware platform has its own strengths and weaknesses, and as we approach each version, we really try to make the best of each platform.
Mm-hmm.
With the Live Arcade version, obviously the 360 has its own graphics architecture that we needed to deal with. We have a different live infrastructure in the way matchmaking works. So there is a lot of different things that you need to take into account when moving to a different platform. For this particular version, we were very excited about the multiplayer aspects because Live is very mature now. It's got a lot of great features, and so we were able to kind of expand and tap into that infrastructure that exists there. And that's one of the things that has really helped lift this version of the game up.
There's a lot of people online playing the game, but can you give them a little bit of tips for the multiplayer? Let's talk about some of this for a second.
Tips for the multiplayer.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we have the two different modes, race mode and deathmatch, and I guess strategies can vary between those two. I think one of the tips that our testers found was in the race mode. One way to really annoy other people is with the jump gun.
Okay.
And the jump gun, basically, when you get hit with that, you get catapulted into the air.
Uncontrollably.
Well, in this particular game, you can actually control your car in the air, but if you time it at just the right time, if someone's just coming up to a corner, or worse, if they're coming up to the finish line and they're coming up to going through the checkpoint, you hit them with that jump gun, and it's going to be pretty tricky for them to either make that corner
to recover
or to come through that checkpoint. So. Yeah, that's one little tip to watch out for.
That's good to know. Are you a racer? I mean, where did you come up with this idea? Do you just like to drive fast in New Zealand?
Well, occasionally. Certainly, it can be quite perilous driving in New Zealand, depending on which particular road you're on. But the original idea for the game came from Andy Satterthwaite, who's one of our producer designers. And we were thinking a while back about the types of games that we wanted to make, and we're quite inspired by games like Super Monkey Ball, and also we're quite interested in classics like Stunt Car Racer.
Mm-hmm.
and niche games like Elastomania, which was a physics-based vehicle game. And really, I guess it kind of came about by writing down these sorts of games on the same piece of paper, and then kind of when you're
taking the best of each one,
and it's like, well, actually, there's maybe something in the middle there,
right?
And, so really, it is inspired by, I guess, those different types of classic games that we wanted to kind of bring across to the handheld space and the download space.
Mm-hmm. One of the great parts of the Xbox 360 platform is achievements.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the achievements. What are some of the achievements that folks can expect in this title?
Well, there's a variety of different achievements because there's lots of different things you can do in the game.
Yep, as we've seen.
You know, there's one achievement, Big Air, which is basically you need to do a big jump and stay in the air for 10 seconds, which kind of sounds easy on the surface, but you know, can be quite challenging. There's also achievements around the race mode and clocking up victories there. There's mm-hmm. also achievements around trying to get multiple objectives on the same run mm-hmm. through a level. So there's a lot of, I guess, thinking that people will have to do to get some of these, and also you know, things around dexterity and skill as well. So people should have a lot of fun trying to get the full set of achievements.
Is that fun for you guys as developers? It's a different facet of game development. It kind of allows you to have a little bit of a voice in the achievements. I, you know, if you, when you look at like Gears of War, some of these other games, you know, they have fun with them. I assume you guys had fun with them.
Yeah, it's an extra layer that that allows you to kind of play around a bit. And,
right.
You know, it's one of those things that when you're play testing the game and you're going through and you're trying things out and you're prototyping, occasionally you get these things where, you know, someone will do something and you'll be like, hey, wow, that was really cool.
Right.
And, you know, the achievement system allows you to wrap something tangible around and expose that to the users and say, okay, you just did a massive jump. We're gonna reward you with that.
Make it meaningful. So, make it meaningful.
Yeah.
What's going on with you for the next 12 months with you guys? You know, what are we looking? What can we look for from your studio?
Well, we're working on a few things right now for different consoles. Working on different racing games. We're working across a range of stuff from, you know, PlayStation, Wii, but increasingly investing in the 360 platform. We're working on several other live arcade titles at the moment.
Great.
So
nothing to announce yet, but soon, right?
Yeah, those will be in under wraps for a while. But
sure.
You know, certainly we're hoping the success that we're seeing with GripShift on the platform, you know, is really inspiring us to really see what we can do, push the limits, and you know, very excited about the future of the download space.
I've asked this of other developers in the past, but when you're a multi-platform house like you guys are, mm-hmm. Do you have special teams that specialize in the PS3 or the 360, or are your folks more generalists and they kind of do it all?
Well, traditionally we've been across a range of different platforms. You know, there haven't been many platforms that we haven't developed for in
right.
the last 10 years. Our guys tend to be generalists in terms of being able to move from platform to platform and genre to genre, and that really enables people to come with different ideas to a new platform, brings a fresh perspective every time. So certainly, you know, this is our first 360 title, but you know, we were very excited about it, and we were very pleased with what we've been able to achieve and excited about the future of the platform as well. So we definitely are building up our knowledge around this platform, but it's being supplemented by techniques that we've brought in from
sure.
other experiences.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, can you go through actually some of the titles that you guys have had over the years?
That's a good question. There's been a range of stuff.
Yeah, because I was looking at earlier, and you have a whole list of them. Just give me some of the headlines.
Yeah, I guess you know, we've worked on a range of stuff from surfing titles on PlayStation 1. We did a couple of Barbie games.
Really?
We did that. Those were interesting.
You weren't Barbie's Horse Adventure, were you?
No, that wasn't us. A lot of contention around that one. We've done a bunch of sports titles that have been quite popular in Australasia. A game called Stacey Jones Rugby League, or Rugby League as it was known in Australia.
Uh-huh.
There was a sequel to that.
Did you do cricket?
We haven't done a cricket game yet.
Okay.
We did do a horse racing game, though. Didn't involve Barbie, but we did that across PS2, Xbox, and PC as well. And,
uh-huh.
More recently, have been working on titles like Jackass the Game and Speed Racer
is
one of the things that we're working on now. So
that's a great range of titles.
Yeah, it's been a very exciting history.
So it feels very sporty and driving that you guys, this thread that winds through your studio.
Yeah, it's
not many first-person shooters.
It's kind of turned out that way. Yeah, I like to think that we're not tying ourselves to specific genres, but certainly there is a strength in sports there and a strength in driving games. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously those are strengths that we're going to build on in the next few years.
Right. Well, I know people are excited about the game. I appreciate you bringing it to the Xbox 360 arcade. It's Grip Shift. It's available for 800 points right now. Do you have anything you want to leave the listeners with?
I just want to see people have fun with the game, go out, and you know, kick each other's ass online.
Yes, exactly. They're going to have great fun doing that over the holiday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
One of the keystones of Xbox Live is the TruSkill system, and I have in my office right now two of the minds behind TruSkill. We have, why don't you introduce yourselves?
So my name is Ralph Herbrig, and I'm one of the original inventors of TruSkill. I work in Cambridge in the Microsoft Research Outlet in Europe.
That always confuses people because you say you work in Cambridge, but you have this German accent.
Oh, that's true. And actually, our lab is quite widespread in nationalities because we have a lot of some Germans, we have a lot of French. A few Spanish people, Portuguese, Finnish,
it's
Austrian.
It's like the UN.
We have the European part of the UN.
Right, that's true. So Rolf, you work on it, and we'll can the mic over here, and then we have.
Yeah, my name is Joaquin Quiñonero Candela, and I'm the Spanish envoy to the UN. No, I joined Microsoft Research in January, and I'm very lucky to have joined the Applied Games Group. So I'm working with Rolf and Tore.
Right. Now, I've had Ralph and Torrid on before, probably a couple, probably about 2 years ago, right after we launched. So it's good to have you back again. And where's Torrid?
Torrid's actually back home.
Okay.
Defending the
His wife wouldn't let him travel.
His wife.
That happens when you get married, guys. Trust me. But I'm glad you guys came in. You were in town working on some other things, and we decided we wanted to sit down because it's always good to get you guys on because TruSkill is really what a lot of the Xbox Live matchmaking system runs off of, right?
That's right. In fact, the entire ranked matchmaking that you find in these almost 300 games now, Larry, is that right?
Right, 300 games.
300 games. Every ranked match that happens there is done with TruSkill, and the estimation, the tracking of everyone's skill is done using the TruSkill system, which we actually built a lot in over the last 2 years. We upgraded it several times to add more and more functionality to the game development community.
Since we launched in November of 2005, and here we are in December of 2007,
two years later,
you've tweaked the system a little bit here and a little bit there.
That's right. We kind of listened a little bit to what we listened a lot to what the game development community needed to make the TruSkill system work better for their games. And as a result, there's at least two major updates where people got more and more, game developers got more and more capabilities to refine and shape the ranking system for their particular game.
And that's something you do on the back end, right? It's not like a system update when we push that down
It's done in the back end, and it's not so visible to the gamers, but the effect of it is the experience that they have when they play matches is quite visible. To give you an example of it, about the complexity of simulations and math and upgrades we do in the back end. So in preparation for Halo 3, which most of you on the show probably have played at least, we work with Bungie very closely on simulating the experience that all of you are going to have for the initial rank leveling experience. And So to give you an idea of the scale of things, we together with Bungie, we took over 60 million Halo 2 games.
So you took all the Halo 2 data.
That's right. So in fact, there's a nice story where this is over 200 gigabytes of data that had to be, by some mechanical mean, moved from the US to the UK.
Hey, you copy it a hard drive and you send the hard drive over.
That's right. Or you carry it in
in a briefcase.
And it's right. So we took the first 3 months of every single Hopper, Double Team, Slayer, Rumble Pit, as it was called back then, now Lone Wolves, and re-ranked them, meaning re-rank, as you all know, Halo 2 has the Halo 2 ranking system, and Halo 3 has now the Halo 3 ranking system, which builds on the TruSkill system. So we took these match outcomes and we re-ranked them, and that's a monstrous task because we didn't just do them the standard TruSkill system as the chips, but one of the extensions that we kind of looked at is how can we, because game developers have been telling us that it'd be interesting if you could slow down in a very controlled way the the way that the skills update from match to match. So we tried all sorts of ways of slowing down the Truska system in a controlled fashion and re-ranked the first 3 months of every gamer as if he had used Truska for Halo 2. To give you an idea, this kept 15 machines busy for an entire week of computation. The results alone, which were simply the leaderboards as they would have come out as 3 months after Halo 2, the results alone filled 52 gigabyte. And we took a lot of effort to simply be able to browse those kind of data. And when you go these days now, you don't notice any of this complexity when you play Halo 3.
Right.
But all of these simulations did happen. I mean, the experience you have is absolutely not by chance. And what's also interesting is, in a way, when I play Halo 3 these days and I look at the skill viewer and one of the things, I kind of look back at the days when we did these simulations and compare what I see there with the simulations that we did back then.
I want to back up a little bit, though. How do you and you did this before with me, but explain in the base form how the true skill equation works. And you've publicly published the equation, correct?
That's right. So the entire math around true skill is now published. It actually was presented at a conference last year, almost 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually one of the reasons why we're in town, because we're going to this conference again in Vancouver.
Right.
And it was very well received by the scientific community. In fact, it was the conference at the time had over a 95% reject rate, and this paper made it for a presentation.
What are some of the other papers that make it in, just out of curiosity?
There's a lot of stuff on signal processing, like how could we, when we have this audio here, how could we separate between what Larry says and what I say if we talk on top of each other?
I see.
Which we don't tend to do, because this is a very controlled interview. But
right.
In a real-life situation, if Joaquin starts to bubble now, we would like to know.
Right.
Yes, right. We would like to know who spoke when. And that's kind of the verb.
So just all sorts of interesting analytical, mathematical.
That's right.
So what I call, and I've called you guys before, scary math.
Scary math.
Right.
I think
big
scary
numbers
math.
And
scary math is a good summarization of what we do.
So you presented the paper and it was well received.
That's right. That's right. And so the technical details, they're all out and known, but you know to make a technical idea such as TrueSkill work and relate and convert into a fun game experience, one of the crucial bits is of course the game developer.
Mm-hmm.
And game developers, this is why we actually gave also, this is now publicly available, a talk at the GameFest conference where we explained how TrueSkill works on a more intuitive level, and there's a lot of tools that are now available for game developers on the Xbox support pages. And so you were asking how the TrueSkill system works.
Yeah, what is the sigma or mu of fun? What is the equation for fun in your mind?
I think in my mind the equation of fun is a perceived fairness.
Okay.
It's actually a very fun term I read recently on a blog by Jeff Fogel, and he called it the law of conservation of fun.
Okay.
Meaning, in principle, people would say it's great. I have the most fun when I win a game. And that's true, but
that
for every win that you have, there's another player
who's not happy
on the receiving end, who's not happy at all. He lost. So that there is a problem, because as much as we would like to give all of you guys on the show a win and a winning experience,
somebody has to lose.
Somebody has to lose. So the best we can give you is a win every other game, in every other match. Not statistically, that would be boring, but the best we can give you is matches where you have a fair 50% chance of winning it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look back over the last week that you played matches on any sort of game in Xbox Live, you'd like to say, oh, half of them I actually won. Now I'm talking about the one-on-one encounters.
Right.
And half of them I lost. So if we talk about a race in PGR4, then of course I mean being in the top part, in the top part of the match outcome or in the bottom part. And for me, or for us, this idea of creating tight matches where it comes down to the last half a second in the race,
mm-hmm.
where it comes down to the final second in Crazy King, or where it comes down to the last kill in Call of Duty 4.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we see the relationship between probability, the probability of winning, and fun.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I feel I always had to work hard, but I had the chance to win this match.
Right. Right. So that's kind of the baseline. All the games, kind of, for lack of a better term, sit on top of this. So like all you Halo 3, Call of Duty.
That's
even,
right.
Even like Lego Star Wars that does, you can match up co-op over live, right?
Even there, yeah. Even on the co-op scenarios. So it's, so the Truscale system is a service now that's available to every game developer, and it's, in a way, it serves as a backbone to their, to every game's matchmaking, ranking and matchmaking system.
Okay.
So it powers them in a way, and games can individualize it to a degree, right?
Right.
So some games might change the number of levels.
Yeah.
Some games might make the system run far, converge faster than others, so it takes you, instead of 10 matches, it takes you 50 or 100 matches. Some games add on top of it an experience component, mm-hmm. Where you also get rewarded for playing, even though your level might have, your skill level might have plateaued already. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's part of the equation that makes fun.
But there's all, I remember this probably about a year ago. There's all these, there's all, people are always upset at Truscale because they couldn't use it in party systems.
That's right.
Do you remember that? Can you explain that and what's, and let's disarm folks right now with that.
Okay. So the main one of the main premises of making sure that the system can guarantee you these fair matches is that when we're trying to estimate these numbers, we're trying to figure out what is your skill level relative to everyone else in on the online universe. We need to make sure that the match outcome is part of you playing that game, playing in the most competitive way.
Right.
Playing it fairly, shall I say. So, of course, there can be parties on Xbox Live and ranked matches, provided that these people, the party itself, ends up being in the same team, because their fate is then shared.
Right.
When either this team wins or this team loses. And that's, you see this in some games already. That have party system quite well working. I mean, Shadowrun, Halo 3, Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it's ensured that the party ends up, the group of friends that want to play together, ends up sharing the same fate in terms of a match outcome, either winning altogether or losing altogether, parties and ranked matches are in alignment totally. I'm not in conflict at all.
So it's false if people say, "Well, you can't use Truscale because of the party system, it just doesn't work." That's completely false.
That's not right. Yeah, that's
false.
Yeah,
it's
too dangerous. If you, I mean, the temptation is too large. If people in the same party could stage matches and
would gamers do that?
No, I would never do that.
I know, but you would. Now, we talked about the fact we're 2 years old, the service is Xbox 360 2 years old. And you said it was updated a couple times already. Tell us some of the learning, some of the high level, the couple bullet points here that are interesting data that you're like, wow, you know, before launch we didn't think this would have happened, but it did.
So one of the things...
Or were you guys just so genius that you mapped it all out brilliantly?
No, not at all. There were a lot of things that we learned. So one of the things that we learned was that games are differently populated, and the Xbox Live system right now is built the matchmaking system is built and to cater for games that have not such a large population as the blockbusters in this holiday season. So we call them low pop or low population games. Games that are having 1,000 or 10,000 gamers and
right.
not the millions.
Right.
So at the time, we kind of had to make sure that there's always an inherent conflict in matchmaking, that on the one hand, everyone would like to have the tightest match of all.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, he would like to have that instantaneously. He just decides to play a match of Marble Blast Ultra and he... By some magic way, there should be, of course, millions of other Marble Blast Ultra players, which there isn't.
Right.
So that we have a tight match here. And that's what's in conflict here is, of course, the longer you're prepared to wait for a match, the more tighter will your match be, because the chance that someone of your skill level comes by is higher.
Right.
So if you always have, as a game, we learned this lesson that you always have to trade off how tight the match is in skill and how fair with the waiting time in a lobby. It's not so much fun to wait, if you think about some racing games, to wait as long for a match as you actually takes you to do that race then.
Or sometimes longer.
Or sometimes longer, you see. So this balance is, the way that the Truscale system was designed is optimized to minimize that waiting time.
Okay.
But it comes at a cost. which is the match quality. So in some games that you will see out there, the cost feels quite heavily, so you perceive it as if the match aren't that tight. And the reason they're not that tight is because we prefer you rather to play than a loose match than not to play at all.
Right.
And now we've given a lot of information to game developers. We're the standard web page mechanisms, web pages, conferences, talks, to help them as well if they want to strike that balance differently.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to strike that balance more on the side of we prefer tighter matches, and you know, people probably have to wait for a minute or minute and a half, but then we can give them a much, much more bumper-to-bumper experience than if we get them, match them immediately, and then widespread skills. So we couldn't, you know, we didn't anticipate this to be an issue 2 years ago, and
right.
Now some, you know, a lot of corrections have been taken.
So there's, you know, the TruScale system is it's an equation. What is the equation? Give me the equation right now.
I can't give you the equation right now.
Why not?
Because this is it's an interesting difference and an evolution of, I think, almost computer science. So if you look back at what was in place online and video gaming before TruScale,
uh-huh.
There was a system called ELO, E-L-O.
Yeah, remember we all used to have that in I think it was Rainbow Six.
That's
that,
right.
And everyone was like, what is ELO?
What is ELO?
Right.
ELO is much simpler to explain. In fact, the equation I could give you right now, it's a bit hairy, but it's not that long. It's got a bit of an interesting history, because the ELO system was developed by a guy that was actually called ELO, Arpad ELO, a Hungarian professor.
Is that why it's called ELO system?
Yeah, that's why it's called ELO system. And he was a chess player,
right.
Professional chess player. He was asked by the Chess Federation to devise a system that allows them to rank his peers for tournaments. And he was asked this in 1960. It was computers were not around. They weren't just about to be invented.
Right.
So what he needed is a system that you were just asking for. He needed an equation he can write on a piece of paper and work out without any computer.
Yeah, that you can put up on the whiteboard.
That's right. What we did when we developed TruScale is we were thinking, well, computational resources are abundant. I mean, we have computers are abundant and computation time is there. So it is well known that ELO is a good attempt if you want to have a closed form, a small equation,
mm-hmm.
But it's not as accurate, and it will take a much longer time for the system to converge. In fact, because ELO was designed for chess, it was never done for the typical online gaming scenario, 8 players racing each other, or in fact, ELO has this notion of promotional ranking for 30 matches. Now, who of you guys would like to not get a ranking for the first 30 matches?
And so 30 matches, you'd be at level 1.
Yeah.
and then maybe go to level 2.
Exactly. So when we did the TruScale system, we said we didn't stray away from the possibility of using what we call an iterative procedure,
right.
Something where we could describe every single update step to the... And then, but in order to really work out what is your skill after as a result of you winning against, or me winning against you and Joaquin, we would possibly have to iterate that equation numerous times.
And so it's almost like a living equation.
That's right.
It's changing and it's modifying itself based on the input.
The equation isn't, but the inputs... it's not clear for how long it will always compute, so there's a limit we put in, but the equation varies in runtime, in compute time for every single match. So that's why it becomes so hard even for us. I mean, people sometimes ask me, like, how many games do I need to level up? This question cannot be answered. The system is far too complex to give a precise answer.
Even the inventor of TruScale can't answer that question.
That's correct. I cannot answer that question. I can answer it once I know exactly your skill and exactly the skill of everyone you play. And we have some tools. I mean, there's a huge array of tools we develop for understanding and analyzing these scenarios now.
Right.
But it defies this easy interpretation. But it defies it at the benefit of being a lot more accurate than any existing system out there in figuring out what is your skill and which is the essential quantity to make sure if there is enough players around, we want to give you the tightest match possible, the fairest match possible.
Fairest match.
When fair matches is fun.
So do you think that, you know, you talked about the ELO system. Could you use the TruScale system for in a chess match?
Yes, you can. In fact, there is an interesting paper to the conference that we go next week. That we're going to present there,
mm-hmm.
Where we took the entire chess history, the chess games of the last 150 years. So
who keeps track of that?
There's a company called ChessBase.
And that's all they do?
They develop, no, they distribute a game called Fritz, and they keep track of chess databases, yes.
So all the is it professionals?
It's all the professional games. So there is, in fact, the number of recorded games skyrocketed over the last 20 years. Most of these 3.5 million matches are recorded over the last 30 years or so.
Well, because record, you know, with computers, things became easier.
Correct, yeah. Right. So we actually took that data set and we extended TrueSkill to analyze it and analyze it for the first time to do something with TrueSkill that we don't do in Xbox Live, but it's an interesting idea to propagate information backwards in time.
Whoa.
So the idea is, in principle, we should, the fact that Kasparov beats Karpov in 1986 should have an effect on some player in 1886. Because there will be a chain of people. There will be a person that Karpov played. Let's call him Bobby Fischer. And there will be a Bobby Fischer who played Spassky. And there will be a Spassky who played Mikhail Tal. And you can go all the way back. Somehow people get connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to learn the extension of TrueSkill we did to analyze this chess data actually reveals for the first time how people's skill over the span of 150 years have developed. And it allows us for the first time to also say, how would a Paul Morphy who lived in 1850 have scored against a Kasparov who lived 150 years later? These two people could have never played, technically. Right. They never lived in the same time.
But using this algorithm and the data, you could quote-unquote match them up against each other.
That's correct. That's correct. And we do, as I said, we had to do it to be as accurate as we can. We did something that we don't do in TrueSkill right now, which is go backwards in time.
Right.
I think it would be a scary thing to do this on TrueSkill, on the Xbox Live service right now, because it would mean that Larry and me were playing right now, and let's say I would lose against Larry. Mm-hmm. That would already, my skill would already go down. But then in the future, it turns out Larry isn't such a great player. And then it would rank me down further simply because me and Larry get linked.
Right.
And I don't have to play, but my skill level changes without me playing.
Without you playing.
Well, that's a scary thought. Yeah.
That is a scary thought.
And, of course, it's completely hypothesized that Larry's...
Right. That's assuming I win.
Of course.
And assuming you lose. It's interesting. Joaquin, I want to talk to you for a minute. Tell me about the side of TrueSkill that you work on.
Oh, I haven't been doing much work on the actual algorithm. I mean, when
of course, because Rolf already invented it.
Exactly,
and it's done.
It was already invented. We've been applying the algorithm to analyze web data.
Okay.
So it's a general ranking algorithm and a very powerful one that allows to process huge amounts of data.
Okay. That's a lot of data.
That's a lot of data.
tell me about the event you guys have coming up.
Right. Okay. So the name of the event is Silicon Minds. So this is going to be the warm-up challenge to the Dream Build Play 2.0 contest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it's worth for me to say something about the Dream Build Play contest, the first one.
Sure.
So this is a contest that has taken place this year. It was launched by the XNA team.
Yep.
And the idea was to encourage people to go and try XNA Game Studio to develop games. The results were presented at the Game Fest event in August this year. And they had something like 4,000 people register. In the end, there were only about 200 submissions, of which they had to select more people than they wanted because people came out with great games.
Well, that's so we designed the tools and the community just came up with these amazing games.
Exactly. Right. So now what we want to do is we were very inspired by this idea because one thing that we've been observing in our community, in the machine learning community, which is conference we're going to in a week is a major conference in machine learning. People are very interested in trying very advanced AI ideas.
So is AI the same as machine learning?
You could sort of say they're intersecting. It's I wouldn't sort of strictly say that one is a subset of the other necessarily. But you know, probably if you look from the distance, there's probably not much difference
between. Okay, I'll let you continue.
You can say that. Yeah, that's right. So our feeling is, you know, we saw here sort of a win-win-win situation. So on the one hand, we have people in the machine learning community working on AI for games, whether it's real-time strategy games or whether it's board games or what have you, poker. One thing they always have to do is they have to pretty much code up a game from scratch in order to be able to try their algorithmic ideas, right?
Right.
And, you know, although you can expect many people in the machine learning community to be very, very good at math and at AI, not necessarily all of them want to spend or have the ability of spending a lot of time doing advanced coding to put a game together. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, right? The other thing, of course, is if you want to share game assets between groups that develop, ideas, if you were using the same platform, it'd be trivial to share those assets. And mm-hmm. you could imagine, you know, much, much quicker progress. So that was sort of the first thing, right? We sort of thought, XNA looks like a fantastic tool that we should basically show to the machine learning community.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, of course, the XNA people are trying actually very actively to sell the XNA idea to the academic community. And in fact, as of now,
so when you I'm sorry to cut you off, but when you say that, it's people that are listening right now are thinking, I can go and sign up for college and learn how to play games.
That's absolutely right.
That's what they're here, or a university, as you guys like to say.
Yeah. Actually, let me tell you something. On Monday this week, I was over in Dublin.
Yep.
And that was the first day of the XNA European tour.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that Dave Mitchell, who is he's the director of XNA.
I've had David on my show in the past.
Very good indeed.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a tour that goes to a number of universities in Europe. In fact, there's seven events, and Dublin was the opening one. And I went there, and I gave a talk about some of our research in game AI. And I was very impressed at the number of students that were there, and they were incredibly enthusiastic. And some of the things I heard there is that there's 200 universities in the world who have incorporated XNA to their curriculum. And in fact, are teaching computer science using XNA. Because apparently, it's a very hot thing. Students want to learn game development.
Do they want to learn game development? But it's interesting, because learning game development, coming up with the idea for the next, you know, the next Halo, or the next, you know, Call of Duty, or the next Tetris even. You know, it's a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of, to get back to our point, Rolf, there's a lot of scary math underneath that makes that happen.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But I guess there's a lot of, you probably don't start game development by coming up with Halo or Call of Duty.
Right.
4
no, that's an iteration further
exactly,
down the line.
It's an iteration. So I think the big thing here is to democratize game development, as it were, right? To enable students and young people who are making their first steps into game development to be able to very quickly come up with something and try out ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So why did we team up with the XNA people, and why did we end up organizing the sort of the warm-up challenge?
I don't know, you tell me.
Exactly. So the idea for us is, we are very interested in working with new talent. So one of the things that we're offering as a prize for this contest is internships.
Mm-hmm.
So we have teamed up with Lionhead and with Rare Studios.
Mm-hmm.
They're both based in the UK, actually not too far from Cambridge. And so we're going to be offering up to three internships for the best entries.
So people can enter this competition. And then they could end up working with Peter Molyneux.
That's exactly right. They could end up...
in the best-case scenario.
Peter's actually really excited about this, I should say. We talked with him about a month ago, and he's extremely excited about getting to know the winners of this competition.
Yeah, because it's great that you have the academics, you know, that you have the students in there.
The winners will definitely get to meet Peter.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That's right, yes. So let me give
you... What about for North American folks?
Sorry?
Is it open to everyone? Because, it's very European-centric, but I assume it's open to everyone.
Yes.
I guess it's just it's a bit coincidental, the fact that it seems European-centric. I mean, we are organizing it, and it so happens that, it was an ad hoc thing that we ended up talking to Lionhead and
sure.
to
work. You're at the pub one night, you run into them, the rest is history.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, so just to give a bit of information about the dates, Chris Satchel, he's a general manager of XNA, is
yep.
going to be publicly announcing this event on December 8th
okay.
in Vancouver at this conference, at,
yep.
at the Machine Learning Conference. And we are expecting submissions by the end of January.
Okay.
And we will announce the results at the GDC conference in San Francisco in 2008.
In February, right? Is it March?
In February. It's end of February.
End of February,
yes,
right.
Yes, the last week of February. And so what we're giving away is we're actually giving the finalists. We're going to single out up to five finalist entries. And all of these will be invited to come to GDC and present their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to give stipends to help people finance that trip to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
So I'm going to put links to all of the what you've mentioned and where they can find out more information on the blog. I know I've got links to information about the competition, information about... Now, you guys... Now Rolf, you have the blog that you have. You have that nifty tool up there, right? The Ajax tool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Oh, yeah. I've mentioned that. That's right. So one of the things that we did more on the side of... support, I should say, and Truska information is we gave a complete overhaul to the Truska webpage as we had it when we launched.
And
not only does it look different, it actually has because that question, where will my skill be if I win this match,
right,
has come up numerous times across all games on the feedback forum. And so we have now a web calculator in there, which is completely Ajax-based. So all these scary numbers that were in the original one, I think we counted at some point over 36 numbers and 21 input fields that one would have to put numbers
in. That's a lot of variables.
It's a lot of variables. It's a lot of numbers. I mean, it even scared the
scared the hell out
of us. Yeah. So this is all now completely interactive with no more numbers to be entered. You just have nice sliders to set your mu sigma. In real time, you get the true skill equation working out what would your displayed true skill be. Mm-hmm. On top, this is the one that you always see in the games. And what would the one behind the scenes be? What would that mean skill and the uncertainty be?
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of relate that a lot better now. We've made sure that you can send these, you can kind of take snapshots of scenarios and share them with friends in it being a recreatable.
So this I just also want to point out to people, it's not like you can go up here and punch in a few numbers and it's going to tell you how to level up in Halo 3. That's not what this is.
No, that's not what this is at all. No, not at all. It's more a way, I think, to better understand how True Skill works.
Right.
And we've actually found that with one of our guys who joined us over the 2 years, Phil Trelford, our developer, he initially got most confused about what's this math and what's it really doing. But with this tool, I still remember the day when he came in and said, I got it, Ralph, I understood it. Because he simply played and said, he took the slider of the winner, what would be the winner goes all the way from level 0 to level 50.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw immediately what would, you know, the intuitive effect that if he was much lower ranked than everyone else, he would jump a long way.
Right.
And if he was ranked already way above everyone else, then he wouldn't even change at all.
Right.
And the fact that you can do this interactively, it really enhances people's understanding of how TrueSkill works.
Are you surprised with how many people want to know about TrueSkill? Because it sounds like a lot of people are really interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, there was one of the projects that we did with one of the teams we have in Redmond, in Cambridge, is human computer interactions team. Because one and
human computer interactions.
Yeah. So this is the guys with the cool gadgets. They always work on the future ways that we,
like the Surface and whatnot.
The Surface is actually one of their.
Oh really?
They actually worked on the Surface. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've seen all the cool secret stuff. That
yeah,
you
yeah.
Talk about.
Oh, have you played that video puzzle?
I've played with the Surface. It is mind. And it's, you know what? I can't even do it justice by talking about it because you have to have people go see it.
Yeah, yeah. That's, do you know the video puzzle?
Yeah.
So you play a puzzle, and instead of it being a static picture, it plays back a video.
Yeah.
I'm just telling it for the listeners.
Yeah.
And
sometimes the video is upside down. And you got to move these cubes around. It's really confusing. It's fun.
So one of the things that we did with them is we quite early on we learned that there was a lot of confusion for people. This concept of no longer is my the skill that matters so much to gamers. No matter is it a number, a single number, but there is this mean and this variance and this uncertainty. So we actually did a lot of research around how can you best display uncertainty to gamers and to make it
easy to understand, and you've probably seen there's numerous ways that people have included this and taken some of these ideas into their games. So one thing that springs into my mind here is Saints Row.
Mm-hmm.
So there you find quite a unique way of visualizing your true skill when you go to the Saints Row leaderboard. Because what you find there is now all of a sudden you can actually see these numbers. But instead of boring you with, like, here's your mu of 15.7 and here's your sigma of 0.8, you see these bars where you have these three regions, the skill that you definitely have, the skill potential, which is pretty much just the spread of sigma, and then the skill that is less likely for you to achieve because it's so much out of your current estimated range of skills. And it's interesting because it is an absolutely non-trivial task to make people, including ourselves, actually understand this concept of uncertainty. And it's so central for this algorithm to work correctly and fast, but it's so difficult. I think it's a research challenge in itself to make sure that this can be easily comprehended. And the numbers might be easy in math to work out, but I think there's still a lot of research challenges ahead to help people to visualize that better.
Right. We're going to wrap it up in just a minute, but I probably should have done this at the beginning of the interview, but you talk a lot about the research and you guys kind of go off and sit in a big room with your white coats on and your whiteboards and you figure these things out.
That's right, without the white coats though.
Well, without the white coats. the research arm, I want you to explain the research section of Microsoft, because a lot of people may not, but that's what I'm asking you.
Okay, so Microsoft has a research division which was originally founded 15 years ago, or nearly 16 now, in Redmond here. Mm. So this lab has now grown to a considerable size of, I think, 500 researchers.
And you're in Cambridge and China, right?
Exactly. 10 years ago, there was the Cambridge lab was founded as, so to speak, the way to excite and attract European researchers.
Mm-hmm.
And almost at the same time, the Chinese lab was founded. So that's in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
Then recent additions, 5 years ago, there was another lab, which is a very theoretically oriented lab, was added in San Francisco in the Bay Area.
Theoretically oriented, what does that mean?
People there work on, for example, one of the subjects that work there is auctions, online auctions for online auctions, security,
I
online
see.
Security.
I
so
see.
These are even more scary math than we are.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, if you say so.
And then about a year or two ago, there's a lab opened in India. So this is, you know, the Microsoft Research is really growing. I mean, it's like, as I was saying, it's now over 15, 16 years old as an organization. It's rather small compared to the total size of Microsoft, which is, I think, in the 80,000 people.
Right.
But it's pretty well spread around the globe.
But the research department, you guys come up with some ideas like TrueSkill, and then eventually they get brought into products like Xbox Live, and you talk like Surface and some other things.
That's right. So I think one thing that's unique about Microsoft Research as a research organization is that we're, in contrast to other organizations and research institutions, without saying names here, we're not bound to Microsoft Research is an independent unit, so it helps a lot in having taken a long-term perspective and working on the really hard, difficult problems, because Microsoft Research groups don't have to find their fundings immediately from product groups.
Mm-hmm.
That was a decision that was made right when the labs were set up, and it really allows us to take a year out and look at the problem on its difficulty.
You sit back, you think, you take long lunches.
You could see it that way. It's a creative process, almost like an art.
Right, exactly. It's an art.
But then there's also quite a good incentive system on the Microsoft Research side. So as a researcher, there's two ways you can make brownie points. One is, of course, make world-class research published at conferences such as the one we go next week. Or another one is to take an idea and transfer, we call it technology transfer, transferred into this technology into an existing product.
Right.
And that's equally high rewarded, which is then obviously the regulating factor to make sure that we're not just sitting in the office and dreaming all day.
And taking up space.
Taking up space, yeah. So it's a very exciting environment, I would say, very stimulating, exciting environment to work for. So anyone on the listeners who wants to join,
is very welcome to apply. We have a lot of internship, huge internship programs. So
last time you were on Cambridge the show, alone, we talked about this as well.
That's right. In Cambridge alone, we had last year, I think, 103 people being interns. The lab itself is only 19 people staff. Wow. So we had more people as interns than we were staff.
Wow.
And it's a program that we, if anything, want to grow.
Right.
So, you know, we're really interested in working with young students. The program is open to master students as well as PhD students, and that's from around the world. So,
and just because just because you're a great sniper in Halo 3 doesn't mean you'd be a good researcher.
Yeah, that's right. So
there's other qualifications.
For our group, it helps to play video games because our team, our group, the Applied Games group, is pretty focused on games.
Right.
But there's got to be something else on top of being just a goddamn good sniper.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm going to wrap it up now. Rolf, and always good to see you. Joaquin, first time on the show. Thank you for coming by, and I'll definitely put a link up to the to what you were chatting, both of you were chatting about. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
We'll see you at GDC?
We'll see Joaquin at GDC. For me, we have to see with my wife.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm here with Brian Gerard, who is the community lead for Bungie / Halo. Brian, hello.
Larry, how you doing?
It's good to see you again. I haven't had you on the show, and we were just talking about it before we started rolling here. It's been about 2 years.
Yeah, long, long time. Lots happened since then.
Yeah, a lot has happened since then. Yeah. I mean, well, let's go through that, shall we? So, of course, the big Halo 3 launch this year was spectacular in September. I didn't get a chance. You were actually here in, you and I were talking about this, you were here in Washington. I was out in New York being the crazy man.
Yeah, I was here. Obviously, most our team's based here, so there's roughly 100 of us that were here supporting the launch in Bellevue, which is where we had the Bill Gates appearance. And
right.
A lot of the local Microsoft people had their efforts focused there, and then we had a small entourage of people that we sent out to the New York event.
Right.
And actually, a couple of guys went down to Los Angeles and Miami as well. So we tried to spread ourselves around, and Europe, actually, for that matter.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
But since our whole team's here, we had busloads of Bungie guys go to the stores in this area, and that's kind of where we put the bulk of our effort.
So I also want to just to paint the picture. You and I are sitting in one of your conference rooms. I'm not allowed inside Bungie, much like no one's allowed inside.
Well, and last time I showed myself in and walked to your office, and I can no longer do that either.
That's right. So, exactly. Touché.
We're even.
So you and I are sitting in, you've got a couple of video game cabinets here, which
yep. This is
here?
Our, it's a makeshift conference room now because we're so tight on space, but this really is just sort of this is our game room, and let's see, we've got our Street Fighter machine and our Fist of the North Star, so just one of our afternoon rituals. We have a bunch of guys that love to play these fighting games and take it very seriously, and this is where a lot of steam is blown off and a lot of smack is talked in this room.
So I want to have you on the show because this week you released three new maps.
Yep, Heroic Map Pack came out on Tuesday.
For 800 points. And I hear it's selling quite well, as
yeah,
I'm sure
so
a lot
far,
of people would imagine.
The response has been great. And I'm really happy that everyone that seems to really enjoy the maps, I think they're amazing additions to what was already a great game. But
right.
Especially stuff like Foundry has just proven to be a really big hit, so we're happy about that.
Let's back up a little bit, because you and I haven't talked for a while, but, you know, Halo 3 really, you know, Halo 2 redefined the online, you know, Xbox Live service in terms of you had the party system.
Yep.
And I remember the first time you explained that to me before it launched, I'm like, wow, that's really kind of cool. That's going to be really cool. And it turned out to be way better than I imagined. And then so with Halo 3, you certainly had the party system. You refined it and made it better.
Yep.
You have some great new features, the shared clips. You've got Forge. You've got the theater. That's some amazing, amazing technology.
We crammed an awful lot into that game. You know, one of the questions we typically get is like, you know, do you have any regrets? Or is there anything that you tried to get in the game but you just couldn't because
right.
of time? And as amazing as it is, all that stuff made it into the game. And there was a point in time when there's a couple of those things were maybe really close to the edge. But there's a lot of value there and hopefully a lot of longevity. And obviously, we've always had an emphasis on letting our community sort of take ownership of our games and do great things with it. So that's kind of the theme in Halo 3. We really empowered our fans with all these great tools to make videos, make their own maps, make their own game types. And I don't really think we're going to see the real fruits of all that stuff until the coming year. I mean, I think, you know, when people really start to get comfortable with what these features really are and what they can do with Forge. And,
right.
And then when we start to reflect that in matchmaking and update it. And I always like to think that eventually, as time goes on, the ownership of the game experience just moves more and more into the hands of the fans.
Right. Yeah, and that's what you guys have done with the tools. You know, people are sending me screenshots, game clips, and game variants all day long.
Yeah, it's cool. One of the first things we noticed is the worst part about that is you can't hide. So it's like,
right.
You know, when someone sees me online or any of us online,
right.
and most of the times they know who we are because we've elected to be designated in the game as a Bungie employee. And
right.
Now all of a sudden, here's a YouTube video of, you know, hey, I just killed Frankie and Sketch 50 times, and here's my montage set to music of me just
right.
dominating Bungie. And it's great when we're on the giving end and right. we get to like sort of yeah. hype it off. But
when you get spanked, it hurts.
Yeah, it does. You can't run from it. You know, yeah. I'm thinking back to like, you know, we've had over the years for Halo 2, we had some really sort of, we've always had a lot of controversial hump day challenges and things
right.
that came out of the wire and this and
right.
that. At least now we sort of have a definitive record. You've got the game report, you've got the films, and
yep.
The results are there, and no one can hide from them.
Yeah,
so.
it's. I mean, I get those all the time, and I've had videos of myself up on YouTube getting owned in your game and
yeah.
Rainbow Six, and it's part of the territory that we have to deal
yeah.
with.
Well, you know, I mean, it's just that misnomer that people assume that everybody in this building is the best player in the world at Halo, and actually, it's far from it. We've got some really good people here,
right?
But at this point in time, we've already all been eclipsed by the fans, and there's just people out there that are better, that play more, spend more time learning the game. You know, we used to joke that for about the first week, it's great. We all feel like gods were dominating. And then very, very quickly,
the tide turned.
The majority of the population will surpass us. And
yeah.
we start getting sidetracked, working on other projects and working on other prototypes. And eventually we end up being chumps. So.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the land of chumpness. It's and Frankie, of course, is the ultimate chump.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there, but you know, speaking of which, we were talking the other night. We do have a little bit of a long-standing rivalry between
yes, we
our
do.
Groups. So we had the Hump Day Challenge in Halo 2.
That was like 2000. That was right after Halo 2 launch.
It was. That was, if I recall, that was a pretty heated match. A lot of trash talk, a little
yep.
bit of blogging back and forth
yep.
about it. So,
and then I capped off with, I believe, I had some dead flowers delivered to your office.
That's right. And I think, and that was right after you were serving an image that we hosted on our site.
That's right.
So we decided to pull a prank on you and swap
right.
that image
right.
out for something maybe not flattering
right.
to Major
Nelson. Right, not safe for work.
Right, so yeah, we're looking forward to that rematch. Like
we need to
about.
Do that. We need to have a rematch, the live team versus Bungie guys.
Yep.
So it needs to be on an upcoming Hump Day.
Yep, we'll do it.
And we definitely need to do that. Maybe with the new maps.
Yeah,
that you guys have
absolutely.
And all right, we're going to definitely do that. So I'm going to talk to the team, and maybe after the first
yeah,
of the year,
you guys practice over the holidays. We'll
right.
regroup in January.
Right
and make
back
it
at
happen.
You.
Yeah. Oh, we're ready.
Because I know you're ready, because you're waiting for that revenge, just to be
or
clear.
Or we may have to wait till like the first day DLC 2 is released.
Right.
And
where you guys have been practicing the maps internally for
know.
2 or 3 months.
Yeah, that's how we roll.
And then yeah, you're gonna tweak it as best you can. And because let's be clear, last time we beat you at your own game. I just want to...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't quite remember it that way. I mean, that's sort of that sort of contentious results I was talking about.
Right.
So if we had some films and you know, definitive stats, maybe we would be able to settle the argument. But
I remember when you swapped that image out because somebody called me. I was on my way into work, and I actually had to pull over to a Starbucks and flip open my laptop and get on a hotspot
oh, nice.
There and just
pull it out.
To pull it out. I was like, God, because when I was doing that, I'm like, no, they would never do that. Well, yeah, they did.
Yeah, they did.
So
yeah, we did. Well, we thought it was clever. Well, it lasted.
And it was. So it was. But yeah, we definitely need to have another Hump Day Challenge. How are those going?
They're going really good, actually. We've had a couple different. I mean, Luke and Frank are still organizing games every week, and. Last night we played a bunch of guys from Clantacular all on the new maps. It's a lot of fun, and we
yeah.
actually played a couple of Forge variant maps that we'd never played before. And,
yeah,
it's fun. I mean, I think our record this year is way better because with Luke Smith coming on board, he sort of took over the Hump Day. He pretty much made it clear that what used to be a tradition of fun competition is now turned into win or die.
Yeah.
So.
He's
stacked our team a little bit,
right.
So Frank and I don't always participate anymore.
Yeah, understood.
But yeah, I think we're actually doing a little bit better overall. Our record seems to be stronger than it was last time.
Good. Okay. Well, for now, we'll see if I can maybe change that.
Yeah,
our team
on.
Can change that. But you know, we talked about some of the Forge variants and using that feature of Halo 3 to modify games. What are some of the interesting variants that you've seen?
Well, I mean, I'll speak strictly about the new maps
just
for a moment and, you know, not to rub salt in the wounds of the people who maybe haven't yet made that decision. But, you know, Foundry is an example of, I think, of what the grander vision for Forge probably is and originally was. And for people who aren't familiar, Foundry kind of brings a whole new level to Forge because we've added a lot of new objects to the palette. So in addition, you know, rather than just have weapons and some fusion coils, we actually have structures now. So it's sort of taking Halo 3 a little bit more towards what I would say is a traditional map editor,
right?
Where you're actually shaping the flow of the gameplay by dropping walls and fences and ramps and stairways. So really you can clear out this entire big space and rebuild it all up like Lego blocks and drastically alter the way the map plays. So we've been shocked just within the span of about 24 hours after the map's release. We've already seen some what I would say are like AAA quality map layouts that are tremendously amount of fun to play.
Right.
So some of those things will be coming into Bungie favorites this week and next week. I got a couple in my file share right now that some fans have made that are really cool. Our most recent sort of thing here that we're really enjoying is actually a game type created by Bernie Burns,
yep.
Red versus Blue.
Yep.
It's a game he called Griffball. And it's best described as he took Foundry and sort of cleared the whole thing out and made sort of like in a sports arena kind of thing, if you will.
Okay.
So it's just a big wide open area. It's 4-on-4, neutral assault, bomb spawns in the middle. All the players have gravity hammers, energy swords. And it kind of plays like a mix of, I guess I would say, like rugby mixed with soccer, maybe with like some football thrown in. But it's you and your buddies trying to pick up this bomb and push through the other team's defense and score by touching their bomb return point.
Interesting.
And the bomb arms and explodes instantly. So really,
right.
It's just the fight is getting to there and touching it.
Right.
And like the ball handler, once you pick up the bomb, you get a little bit of a speed boost, a little bit of a shield boost, which
right.
allows you to be a little more agile.
Right.
So. I've gotten more and more people turned onto it, and I started playing with Bernie last night. And again, this is within 24 hours of map release. He's already got this really fun thing that plays more like some weird futuristic extreme sport than a Halo game to me.
Right.
And I've been saying I just think it's awesome. It shows how cool Forge is and just how crafty our community is. And I'm looking forward to more of this type of stuff. Like some people have actually made race variants, like motocross tracks.
Yeah.
With big jumps and ramps. I tried one last night that was a short circuit inside Foundry. The cool thing about it was it had this big caged-in area that continuously spawned fusion coils.
Right.
And then they would set off chain reaction explosions. And it happened to work out that almost every time you came around the bend to go over the big jump,
right.
you'd have these big explosions happening all around you. So
right.
it was like this built-in pyrotechnics.
Right, you had your own pyro.
Yeah, I mean, it's just stuff like that is...
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing I'd give a shout out to is some guys over at the halo.bungie.org community
sure.
started creating some game types that they're calling Puzzle Ball, which I would probably describe best as like imagine sort of portal style tricks all being done in the Halo universe, Halo sandbox.
Interesting.
So, they're going in, setting up these maps and building these sort of sequence of events and cause effect things that you have to sort of solve. With the ultimate goal being, can you reach the oddball that's placed in some hard-to-reach location?
Right, right.
And they've got a whole little following around that sprung up. They've got their own leaderboard that they've started with basically how fast can you solve this map.
Right.
It's just really cool to see people pushing Halo way, way beyond the shoot me before I shoot you kind of thing.
Yeah. Also, the thing that you guys added with the downloadable content is there's some. You talked about some of the new objects in Forge. There's two very interesting new objects. There's the man cannon.
Yep.
You added so you can use the man cannon.
You can add a couple of them to the maps.
And you can add it in any of the maps, right? Or just those three?
Only the three maps.
Only those three maps.
And actually, I should preface that by saying I don't believe Rat's Nest has a man cannon on it.
Okay.
So basically, the way it works is. Each map has its own unique Forge palette.
Right.
So at least right now, there's no way for us to go back and sort of tinker with
sure.
the retail Forge palettes without some horrible amount of work and breaking
right.
the game. And
yeah.
it may not be something we can ever do, but
right.
Certainly going forward with future DLC, I think the plan is just to try to keep pushing it further and adding more and more toys to play with.
Yeah, the man cannons were in there. And then, of course, everyone's favorite is the soccer ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did that come from?
You know, I don't know if there's an official story behind it. I know in Halo 2, even during development, we sort of had these big physics objects that would be dropped in for levels for things like scale and testing. And
right.
there was a chunk at one point where we had a big ball that people would just sort of shoot each other and push this ball around. So
right.
it didn't actually ship in the game.
Right, of course. It was just a test.
It kind of evolved from there, just people goofing around, having fun, and artists just sort of took the initiative and actually modeled it into a real ball. And there it is. It's just for...
And let's be clear. This is So Master Chief's 7 feet tall.
Yep.
So this is a 7 foot tall soccer ball.
Yeah, it seems about that. It's gigantic.
It's gigantic. Yeah. So it's not like this little one you're kicking around and you need to really put some muscle behind it.
Yeah, and that was like the first thing I did, obviously, and I had wrote about it on Bungie.net, is we had some media here and we quickly kind of made a makeshift soccer field in Foundry and dropped soccer balls in there, and people were using the hammers to hit the ball around, and it was a really, really fun time, but totally different than what you would think Halo would be about. And cool thing about the Griff Ball variant, it plays very similarly, but soccer kind of relies on honor rules to play because, you know, there is no mechanic right now to keep score if the ball goes in the goal.
Of course.
In this case, the way that Bernie set it up, your bomb is what you're going to score with.
And that
game,
keeps score
the game already
game.
Knows how to do that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I think, making our team think about some other new crazy ways that people could maybe enjoy Halo in the future. And it's good to see the fans are responsive to it.
A couple things I want to ask you is, let's talk about Xbox Originals. Now, how hard would it be to go back and put achievements in Halo? It would be impossible, right? I mean, not impossible, but
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of us think it would be awesome to actually totally awesome to do that. You know, I'm really not sure. I think from an engineering standpoint, it's probably way harder than you or I would think
right.
it would be.
I mean,
we joke about it internally all the time. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if...
Right.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you could replay Halo, co-op online together? Wouldn't it be awesome if Halo matchmaking
sure.
was added to Halo Combat Evolved?
Yeah.
Maybe Microsoft could still do that someday.
And anything's possible.
Yeah, sure.
It's just it's a function of time and money.
Yep.
Really,
yep.
I mean, because you guys could go back or we could go back and do it, but that means you're not working on something else.
Exactly. I don't know if it's something that our team specifically would probably ever do, just because, like you said, I mean, we tend to focus on forward-facing, and
right.
you know, I don't think like doing ports, for example, is really kind of what
yeah.
we would spend our resources on. But you know, I'd be surprised if Microsoft isn't looking at those types of possibilities.
Yeah.
Anything could happen.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. The other thing I want to talk about is the Halo 2 community. You know, it's still vibrant.
Yeah, I just saw that. I mean, there's still a lot of people playing Halo 2 games,
more than
I would have thought.
Why do you think those people haven't jumped to Halo 3? Just because they haven't bought the 360 yet?
Yeah, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure like what percentage of them are actually still playing Halo 2 on an Xbox One versus an Xbox 360. Yeah, I guess I would have to assume that they just haven't had it. They don't have a 360 yet.
Right.
As good as Halo 2 was, I'm not sure anybody would argue that Halo 2 is better than Halo 3 in really any way at all.
Right.
So I don't know if there's people play Halo Combat Evolved still because of nostalgia. A lot of people really love the multiplayer. They love the pistol. To them, like...
Yeah, the super pistol.
That was the pinnacle of the franchise.
Right.
But you don't really hear that about Halo 2, so I'm kind of surprised. Unless it is, like you say, they're on Xbox One, and it's held up better than other Xbox One titles, and it's still really fun to play.
Right. It's a classic.
You know, there's still a lot of pro leagues, for example, that haven't really officially adopted Halo 3 yet, so I imagine a lot of that community is still having to keep sharp at Halo 2. The games are different, so it may be hard to jump back and forth between 2 and 3.
Yeah, it is different, because even when you go play Halo 2 in back-compat mode on the Xbox, you're like playing with the controller. Wait a minute, what's what? You know, it's a little bit of a mental problem. At least I do.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, well, for me, I mean, and for a lot of us, I mean, honestly, even if I play anything else or just don't play anything, period, for a couple of days, I go back to Halo 3, I can immediately tell that I'm off. You lose that little edge. It takes a little bit. You're maybe a millisecond slow on your response. And
you have to have those warm-up games that everybody always talks about.
You do. You do.
Because I go online.
You just have to make sure that everybody's in agreement up front which game's warm-up and which game's official. So you don't...
Touche. That's true.
We have that problem a lot.
Yes.
So.
We will be clear on that moving forward. We're not talking about anything moving forward. You guys are busy on a lot of projects right now.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
There's a lot of hustle and bustle happening inside. And you know, we've already...
I wouldn't know. I'm not allowed in.
Well, there's a lot going on in there. Maybe not so much today because we're really on the cusp of a holiday break for the studio. But you know, we've already been forthcoming about future DLC, and we're right now looking for our next stuff to come out sometime in the spring. And I'm sure after the holidays, we'll have a lot more to say about
and
that.
So it's funny because you know everyone's going to probably groan right now and get really upset at me, but I think I see a new map behind you on the whiteboard.
Oh, do you?
Is that what that is?
Maybe.
I don't know. It could be.
Certainly looks like a series of like rectangular hallways and square boxes.
It's either that or it's a map to the local sushi place. I don't know.
Yeah, it really is. I don't think anyone's missing anything. I mean, yeah, exactly. I could put that on the website today, and it wouldn't exactly be a spoiler because you have no idea what you're looking at.
Exactly. So it's sort of, that one's actually interesting. We're sitting here surrounded by a whiteboard with a bunch of sketches and whatnot. So I'm not going to take photos because you guys are pretty secret about your stuff, and I'm going to respect that.
Yeah, and you met Jerome out front. So.
Yeah, I did, and he'll hurt me.
Yeah.
He's already kind of been looking at me sideways. Like, you're not going inside.
I said,
no, I'm not.
Yeah, and Jerome's our huge, intimidating security guy who sits out front.
And he's huge and he's intimidating.
Yep.
He's doing his job quite well. So you talked about we can expect some things for the next few months, maybe around DLC and additional. What do you guys do a great thing. You guys really pioneered the area of the downloadable content. And then communicating with the community right up front, hey, it's going to cost X amount now, but it's going to be free later on. And a lot of developers have now started doing that. So that's got to be feel pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree even to this day, a lot of people sort of refer to the Halo 2 model as sort of the new standard for how DLC would be handled. And I believe Gears did the same thing.
Yep.
So, it's sort of, I'm sure there's some people out there, maybe over in sitting near you that maybe aren't happy about telling somebody that on this day this fire sale is going to happen.
Right.
So, it's obviously the argument is we're shooting ourselves in the foot, and why we tell somebody, oh, you don't have to buy them if you don't want to.
Right.
For us, it's just really important. I mean,
it's the right thing to do by the community.
And for Halo 2, we had no choice because the way matchmaking was built, and we didn't want to start having each new DLC pack create separate subsections of players where nobody's allowed to play together anymore. And,
right.
I mean, that was sort of a really easy argument for us to make. Nobody wanted to see our online population just implode and matchmaking fall apart.
Right, right.
Halo 3 luckily handles things a little bit better, so the maps are sort of seamlessly part of matchmaking. So, if you and I joined Team Slayer with some buddies and we all have the new maps are there and you are able to play them.
Right.
Now, they're in the rotation. We may get old maps. We may get new maps.
Right.
But people who join and don't have the new maps, they'll just go and play on the old maps.
And then conversely, I assume that if it's a split party, meaning you have the maps and I don't,
then we would all play on old maps.
Old maps, right.
Yep. So we recognize that some people would just want to play the new maps, and that's why we have like just the straight-up heroic playlist that's all the new maps all the time.
Right.
I think it's important, too, just we don't want to see attrition in our community, and if there are people that maybe for whatever reason can or don't want to pay to buy the maps right now,
right,
rather than turn them off to Halo forever, at least they know they don't have to wait that long.
They can mark their calendars for whenever.
I think it's in everyone's interest to get these maps in as many people's hands as possible.
Oh, sure.
And keep them enjoying Halo.
Yeah, no, it's they're not only that, but I mean these maps for 800 points, they cost money to produce. You guys have been working on them for quite some time. It's not like you shipped the game and said, gee, maybe we should work on some maps. Or maybe it was. I don't know.
Well, I mean, just looking at what we've done in the past, I mean, DLC was always a plan.
Right.
We always knew that we were going to be doing it. So, and this time around, having shipped in September instead of November, we were pretty much able, and the game went out the door in August. So we had a period where everybody kind of took their break immediately. And by the time the game hit stores, our team was already back here making DLC, and that enabled us to get our first map pack out in time for the holidays, which was our goal. So,
Did it surprise you, you guys made the decision to ship in September? That must have been a lot easier than November, as you said, not just for the DLC, but just because you're able to kind of – it moves everything back.
Well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people inside would probably agree that it's actually way harder than November. Like an extra month or two would have been great in terms of just development process, but nice thing was, we were able to kind of get out in front of the pack. As you know, this has been a crazy holiday season to be a gamer. I mean, there's so many great titles that have come out in the past 2 months. It was definitely nice to kind of get out in front of the pack and not have to be in the mix of all that.
Oh, but come on. Let's be clear. You guys are the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. You say that, but I mean, it's reality. It's like Halo's coming out.
I'm sure other developers were happy, right?
Because
there was that blast radius of where nobody really wanted to come out the same week or the week after after our game. And I think there was probably some discussions where you have a really huge launch and there's still a chance to maybe do a second advertising marketing push and position Halo for the holidays for people that maybe haven't bought it yet. So you could argue that maybe that your sales curve would get a little extra bump potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't generally have a whole lot of say in that type of strategy.
Right.
But we like the idea of kind of getting out early, getting out in front, and then right. being able to quickly follow up with DLC all this year. So
yeah,
it's
worked
out good.
To your point, this was, and I've talked about it a lot, this season has just been ridiculous. Kicking off with, you know, Madden, and then Bioshock, which was amazing. And then you guys had your game, Mass Effect, and then Guitar Hero, Rock Band, blah, and on and on and on. It just goes, it's crazy.
The games have finally stopped coming out, thankfully. Yeah. So most of us here outside of work have just been trying to take time to catch up on all the great stuff that's come out in the past few months.
Yeah, it's been definitely interesting. What are you guys going to be doing over the holiday? What are you going to play?
I've actually almost caught up with most of the stuff that I wanted to play. The big thing that I haven't gone back to that I want to finish is Mass Effect. So obviously, you know, that's going to be a pretty big time.
Well, I told you what happened to me in Mass Effect. We talked about this, didn't I?
I don't think so.
Warning, spoiler alert. I did this last week as well. So I'm playing Rex, who's one of the characters.
Right.
I love Rex. I take him on all my missions. I'm having a great time with him. Spoiler alert, fast forward right now. He died. And I'm so upset I can't go back to play the game. So I'm just despondent. That's the emotional attachment that you get with the game.
How was I supposed to avoid that spoiler? You just spoiled something huge.
There actually is. I'm talking about the listeners.
I haven't finished it yet.
There's some ways around it, though.
No, I'm definitely looking forward to go back to it. I mean, most of the 360 titles that I wanted to play, I have had a chance to, you know, I had a vacation after the game shipped, and I've had some time to do that. And beat Call of Duty 4, and I've gotten almost all my perks and multiplayer stuff.
Did you play the gunship level?
Yeah, I did.
Unbelievable,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's had a lot of mixed reactions, you know? I mean, nobody denies that it's cool, but I'm sure you've heard this too. People are, you know, chillingly realistic.
Yeah.
It was a great time. But Mass Effect, I started playing it, got really into it, got distracted by a lot of stuff, and I really haven't gotten back into it because I want to wait till I have a really good chunk of time because it's hard for me to keep invested in a big narrative like that. When you play an hour here, 4 days go by, you jump back in again. It's hard for me to kind of stay into the story. So that's my big focus. I want to finish that. And I got to finish the Half-Life 2.
Oh, the Orange Box.
Yeah, I mean, I've played the hell out of Orange Box, Portal, Team Fortress, but I want to actually refinish the entire Half-Life 2 and then Episode 1 and 2. Because I've played Half-Life 2 way back in the day on PC, but I'm enjoying going back through it again, and I want to finish that as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because you were talking about Mass Effect and all, you know, and you know the Half-Lifes. Those are so rich in story, and then the Halo series clearly very rich in story. Yet so much of the Halo universe is the multiplayer.
Yeah,
which there's not a story in the multiplayer, but a lot of the elements of the story are in the multiplayer. You know, the landscapes, the maps, and so forth. It's just interesting that the Halo 3 and even Halo 2 is so big in multiplayer, even though, you know, it's all about fun, gameplay.
Yep, but the thing is, it's like, I think it's the characters and the story that, like, more of a mainstream crowd kind of gravitates toward, and that's probably, like, what put Halo on the map in terms of, I don't know, being covered in New York Times and Dateline, and, I mean, I don't think the multiplayer itself is a really good angle to try to pitch the game or get someone interested in it. But ironically, it's the multiplayer is what keeps people playing for 2 or 3 years on end.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's nothing you want to, you know, if you want to get your friend to play Halo 3, it's probably so you can get them on and just totally kick their rear end.
Well, I mean, you know, we're looking at that kind of stuff. Like, you know, we have sort of that newbie playlist when people that are new to Halo 3 for the first time can go into this playlist that you can only enter if you're below a certain rank. And we're still, even today, researching and exploring ways to try to make that early experience better for people, because the population's gotten so good that, you know, nobody wants to jump online and get their ass kicked. And even with the way our matchmaking system works, I mean, there are just people that may be low end of the spectrum, but they've probably still played way more than someone who's just heard about Halo for the first time. So we're still thinking about ways using our playlist updates to finesse it and hopefully
make it more approachable.
Just even if we need to make a bigger bubble for people or more bubbles, we want to allow people that aren't ultra competitive, that aren't very good, not be totally turned off because they're being insulted and corpse humped their first time playing.
So I thought those were animation glitches.
Huh?
Is that what they're doing to me?
Well, luckily now you can just bring up the menu and mute them immediately in the game if you want to.
So. And which you can do in the guide, but it's like 6 clicks as opposed to you guys 1, 2, 3.
I will say that what once was perceived as a Halo problem, at least after playing some of these other big games lately online, it's nice to know that we're not the only game that has a bunch of foul-mouthed jerks running around.
Oh, yeah. And let's be clear. There's unfortunately, you'll run into those guys. You know, we've got over 8 million people on live. Yep. And when you run into those people, file feedback and send a complaint, because yep. We take action all the time.
You know, and that's a good point, because we still get complaints obviously sent to us about people in games, and we're not in the business of like socially policing Xbox Live. So
right.
I mean, somebody can complain to me all they want, but we're not gonna matchmake ban somebody because they were a jerk,
right.
And we just can't do that. It's not our position. And
right.
Xbox Live has the tools in place,
yep.
So. You're right. I would encourage people to use it. And
yeah,
in the meantime, just go into your scoreboard menu and mute somebody immediately. It takes 1 second,
yeah.
And they're out of your life forever.
Yeah, go to mute, and then when the game's all done, go out to the lobby.
Avoid
go
this player.
And then go to your yep. players list. Go down, you know, submit feedback and file a complaint if they were foul-mouthed, and the service will do that. Because that works across all games as
yep,
well.
Absolutely.
You're mute, unfortunately. Only. Now, does that work game-to-game, or is that session, or how does that work?
What's that?
So if I mute you,
mm-hmm.
and you and I are playing a game, and I mute you, or you mute me.
It's just game. It's for that game.
That specific game.
Yep.
Okay, because
yep.
some people are asking me, I'm like, you know what? I don't know.
No, it's not persistent.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if it was like the whole session or so. Okay, that's one of my questions answered.
I mean, we have the ability, if we wanted to manually like voice ban you, so you can never speak in Halo Online ever again.
Right.
But those are like big weapons to wield, and we don't swing those very lightly. So
yeah.
right now we're fortunately, I mean, aside from some of the jerk aspects, we really haven't seen a lot of the problems that sort of surfaced throughout Halo 2's lifespan with things like super jumping and standbying and
yeah.
modified content. And not
yeah.
to say people aren't still going to do things that we don't want them to do, but for now at least, the problems don't seem to be nearly what they were. You know,
no.
A lot of that goes towards things that we've learned. We've changed the game. Xbox Live has evolved and matured as a service.
And not only that, but the console.
The console is
secure.
Yeah.
So
it's, for now, it's really great to see that things haven't kind of devolved into that. You know, there was that period of time in Halo 2 where things got really, really
bad. It was a
bad.
Little crazy.
You know, we did that massive sweep where we banned like 20,000 people in one fell swoop. So
yeah.
we haven't got to that point yet, which is great.
Yeah. No, it's still, whenever I go on there, and to be clear, 99% of the people I play are actually really cool.
Yep.
They're
totally.
Really nice people. Girls and guys I play, it doesn't really matter. The girls tend to really kick my ass.
Well, that's the cool thing about sort of the party up feature that we have, which is maybe one of the most misunderstood or overlooked features, but you know, at the end of a matchmaking game, when you're in that post-game lobby and a checkbox appears by your name, it was sort of our way to try to help facilitate people to find people to play with better, but
right.
without making the long-term commitment of putting you in my friends list.
Yeah, because that's a commitment. You're right.
It is. It's, and I only got 100.
You're moving in together.
It's kind of awkward. I don't know if I don't know you that well. But, you know, say you go into a social game specifically and you have a fun time playing with random people that you just met in that game. When you hit that button in the post game, it's sort of like raising your hand saying, hey, I had fun.
Let's
you guys
want
to keep playing together?
Yeah.
And once you do that, of course, they then become part of your party and you can keep playing together in customs or on matchmaking for as long as you'd like.
Right.
For whatever reason, I just don't know if that feature really was conveyed enough through the game where people don't understand it. But I always thought it was a cool way just to really, if you find someone you like, you just want to keep playing a few more games together, there you go, push your button, raise your hand, and you're all set.
Yeah, I've used it a few times because we found, as I said, I always come across really nice people, and they're always great to play with, and it's great when you find like the people that, like, okay, that guy's a good sniper, I need him on the team.
Yep.
You know, you get that, or he's a good Warthog driver, or
yep.
what have you.
Or just people that are willing to actually communicate and play as a team.
And play as a team,
because
yep, that's actually one of the challenges, and it's, again, this isn't a Halo situation, I've been in COD4, where people just don't want to be in a team.
Yep.
You know, they just want to go off and do their own thing, and that's, you know, it's always better when you have a team.
I agree.
Rowing in the same direction, which reminds me, you know, we've got to get back to the Live versus the Bungie guys. So
we will
get back to that. So, all right, listen, man, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you coming on. It's been, hopefully I can have you on again not 2 years later.
Yeah, actually, we were talking, we haven't quite cracked into having external guests yet, but Luke and I were just talking about, we should flip it around at some point and have you come and be a guest on our show.
I'd love to. You guys do a podcast at Bungie.net all the time. Well,
yep.
not all the time, but frequently.
Fairly regularly.
Right.
Yeah, it's starting to get some momentum, and we're easing into it and following your lead a little bit there. So
yeah, no, it's, you guys, I've listened to it, and it's always, it sounds great, and it's great to get the insight into inside the studio. You know, because as you have pointed out by parking me in a conference room, I'm not allowed inside, nor is anyone else. So it's a nice way to kind of get an ear inside the building.
Yep. You know, in that sort of open line of communication to our fans is something we've always put a lot of effort into. So the podcast
yeah.
is just one more way to keep that going.
Yeah, to reach the community.
And it's hell of a lot easier and cheaper than making our big documentaries on Marketplace.
Boy, those are just crazy. I mean, just they're great, but they just require a lot of work.
They do. I mean, we had a whole dedicated team, and that's what they did. And I think they all came out fantastic. But obviously, that's not something we're going to do on a biweekly basis,
right?
Where a podcast is a lot more grassroots, informal, a couple guys sitting around a table talking about what's happening in the Bungie office and with Halo and with our community.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah. And you guys have an amazing community. It's got to be overwhelming sometimes.
It is. I mean, absolutely is. And you know, at this point, we actually have these meta communities where it's just started to split off into just a bunch of different subsets, all under the banner of sort of Halo Bungie. But it's just gotten so big.
Like, what are some of the types of communities?
Well, I mean, there's like the pro, really hardcore pro guys,
yeah,
right? And,
yeah.
And what they're into. And then you've got, even now I'm starting to see there's Forge-centric communities popping up where there's websites and forums and communities where all they do is build stuff in Forge and promote it and compete with one another. And then we just have super diehard Bungie fans. They're the guys that are writing Halo fiction and researching and every nuance about the history of Bungie. And
they would probably give their left arm to see that map behind you on the whiteboard.
Probably the use of number 7. I mean, yes. And then the biggest chunk of community is just like it's just sort of the, I like to play this game, but I don't really know much else beyond that.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we hope to, if we're ever going to conquer the world, we're just going to have to keep pushing our casual fans more into the hardcore realm. So that's our ulterior motive.
Yeah, because I know that's one of the missions here at Bungie is to conquer the world.
Absolutely.
And just it's how's that going?
Well, you know, I say the ever many millions of copies of Halo 3 that we've sold have certainly helped.
So, right, and they helped so much that you sold Microsoft back.
That's right. That's right. One of our steps of world domination did involve something about a bloody coup. So,
right, so there you
go. I don't
know
how much blood was shed, but right. we are progressing.
So further on down the list is the thing with the Japanese twins.
Yeah. So. That's a different list.
That's a different list. Right. All right, man. Listen, Brian, I appreciate you taking the time. Please give my best to Luke and to Frank and the rest of the team.
Absolutely.
And whenever you guys are ready to have me over, I'm happy to come over and we'll get on this. We'll get on this competition, this Hump Day Challenge.
I agree.
Sometime soon.
And I think we should not only think about honing our skills, but let's think about some stakes. Let's really.
Oh, really? Okay.
I really want to build this rivalry up. And,
okay.
Let's figure out what we have to put on the line here.
I will also go back and challenge the team with that as well.
Okay.
Because this could be fun.
Yep.
All right, man. I'll talk to you next time. Have a great holiday.
Yep. You too. Thanks.
Joining me on the line right now is co-executive producer on the hit TV series Heroes, Mr. Jesse Alexander. Jesse, thanks for coming on the show. You and I have been trying to get you on the show forever, and we've finally done it.
That's right. I'm so excited to be here, Major. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No, you and I connected, and we met at the Halowood event down in Hollywood when Halo was rolling out the beta early in the summer, and you and I have kept in touch since then, and I'm like, I got to get you on the show, and I'm wrapping up the year here, and I figured now's a great time to do it, because we can talk about, we have lots to talk about. We can talk about, you know, the show, we can talk about HD DVDs, we can talk about, but more importantly, you're actually a pretty hardcore game player, aren't you?
I like to think so, although my gamer card tells a bit of a different story. I play a lot of games. I grew up playing games, and you know, some of my first work was in the video game business, but I got hooked on the Atari 2600, and I had this thing called the Fairchild, which was another early, you know, video game system.
That's going way back.
I know, dude. I'm old. What can I tell you? Games have just been such a part of my life. And just really defined who I am and how I approach my work and my business, and I still can't get enough of it. I have two young kids and a family and a full on job, and it's so hard for me to get in time playing games. But I tend to buy everything that comes out and try to spend some time with it, and it's how I love spending my free time.
Now you're a pretty successful guy in Hollywood right now, and well, not right now, but you are.
Yeah, right now I'm unemployed and just sitting in my house. I've got plenty of time to play games now. I played BioShock all last night. You know, I fired up Freedom Fighters. You know that you guys did the back compat update for, which I couldn't be more excited about. I fired that up this morning. a lot of time for gaming right now.
But I want to go back. Let's go. I want to talk about the games you're playing right now. But I want to go back a little bit for maybe some people that aren't aware of your resume. Give us some of the highlights of, you know, you talked about how gaming influences. What are some of the pieces of work that some folks might know?
Well, you know, one of the first pieces of work that I ever did was actually for Activision. Back in the day, I worked on a couple things for them. One was a title called Apocalypse for the original PlayStation that was with Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. It was original intellectual property that where Activision went out to Bruce and cut a deal with him, and we built a whole story around Bruce. And it had very high ideals in terms of what it was going to be. Originally, your character was going to play Bruce's friend or get pulled into this story by Bruce, and you were going to be interacting with him in an AI kind of way that was absolutely unachievable on the PlayStation. And how anyone ever thought that was going to work, I really don't know. So the final version of the game is really just kind of a glorified Robotron with cutscenes in it,
right,
that I wrote. But it's fun. And that game, actually, I think, was built on by Neversoft on the engine that went to Tony Hawk and was the first Tony Hawk engine. So it's kind of fun if people see it lying around. And then I made my kind of way through Hollywood writing big action movies, science fiction movies, and many of them never got produced, but I would get hired by studios and get paid a lot of money to write these things. I wrote a new Flash Gordon movie for Sony that never got made, and a Jason and the Argonauts thing for DreamWorks, and I adapted a video game called Interstate 76 for Fox, and really made my niche for about 7 years as being the action guy who kind of had a video game sensibility, and I ended up writing all these, you know, big high profile projects. And after a while, I just saw the writing on the wall that it was going to be challenging for any of them to get made because they were so expensive.
Right.
And I figured I should transition into television, where the writer is king and has all the power.
Really? So obviously we're in the middle of this writer's strike that you talked about a moment ago. How is being a writer in television different than movies?
It's the amount of content and the schedule.
I see.
In movies, you're doing 2 hours of content, and it can take 10 years to get the thing made. In TV, for a season of television, you've got 22 hours, sometimes 24 hours worth of content that has to get done in, you know, an 8 month period. And so that content machine needs to get fed, and the only way that's going to get done is if writers put pen to paper. Mm-hmm. And so in television, the model is very much writers and producers are in charge of the television shows. And it makes it a lot more fun than being a writer in features, which can often be nothing more than a glorified stenographer.
Got it. So it's a little bit different. So you made the transition to television. What are some of the television shows that folks will know?
I got into TV. A buddy of mine from school is a guy named Jeffrey Abrams, J.J. Abrams, and he had been quite successful in movies, and he created a show called Felicity and was working on an idea about a spy, and I kind of helped him out with it, and it became the show Alias, about a young woman, played by Jennifer Garner, who was pulled into the spy world. And I worked on Alias with JJ for 5 years, and then during the last couple of years I worked on Lost as well and helped create that show and get it on the air and worked on it for the first season. And then I went over to Heroes, where I've been for the last couple of years. So they're all very much, you know, video game, you know, television shows.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, you talk about them, and I mean, there's been an Alias video game.
Oh, dude, it was a disaster. That was one of the worst days of my professional life. Hopefully, I won't swear too much, but I will probably be candid in this conversation.
That's okay.
We couldn't have been more excited about doing a game with the Alias property. And JJ's a gamer, and this other guy, Brian Burke, who's a producer. We were so excited to do this game. And just as we were ramping up to go shop it around, we found out that they sold the rights to Acclaim, right? And this was back in the day. So I walk into this meeting with these Acclaim guys, and I'm like, I cannot even believe I'm here right now. Why are we doing a video game with you guys? How, can you tell me that this game is not going to be the worst piece of crap ever? What's happening here? Right. How is this my life right now?
Right.
And it was downhill from that moment.
you really set the tone, didn't you?
I totally did, and I tried to engage them, and we actually did a lot of great things in the Alias video game in terms of the story and having it be something that was authentic to the Alias property. But at the end of the day, as we all know, it's about gameplay. And if the controller is not tight in your hand and what the frick is happening on the screen isn't fun and compelling, it's not a video game. It's not worth playing.
Right.
And it just fell into that, you know, sadly, that Acclaim mode, even for, you know, the best efforts of a lot of people, it just wasn't there for licensed titles back then, and it sort of hasn't been recently. And we're hoping to do something different with Heroes. You know, I've engaged very closely with the Ubisoft people who are going to do Heroes, and I think we've got a great studio lined up behind it. I don't think anything's been announced, so I can't really give it away.
Sure.
But I'm optimistic that we're going to have a much better game for Heroes and have it be very integrated with the story. And we actually created some spaces in Season 1 that set up content that would easily translate to the video game world. So I think that'll be pretty great. You know, one thing we did with Alias that was pretty spectacular is Season 1, we had a free first person, or was it third person, kind of action game mm-hmm. that people could play on their PCs that was released on a pretty much weekly basis mm-hmm. that was very successful. It was kind of following that sort of Wild Tangent model
right.
of kind of a browser-based game, and it worked really well for us, and I'd love to see more things like that happening in the future.
You talked about how video games have influenced your writing. So when you sit down and you write the stories, give me some concrete examples where you can say, well...
Well, the easiest example of that is this episode that I wrote for Alias, Season 1, called The Box. And it was essentially Sydney Bristow was trapped, who was the spy, who was trapped in her agency facility by Quentin Tarantino, who played McKenna's Cole, this villain, and he came in and he took the place hostage. That episode was totally designed like a video game. You know, there was kind of your inciting cutscene of these guys breaking in, then, you know, your character had to, you know, take cover, and in kind of a diehard way, you had to move through the vent system. You had to access, like, three bombs that were spread out throughout the facility on some kind of timer. You had to signal your compatriots who were being held prisoner using some kind of very, you know, rudimentary, you know, signaling mechanism. And that was really just, it could easily have been a level in a video game. And I wish the Alias video game had been as good as that model.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right, it is. Now, when you're, you know, you said you
every were... set piece that I wrote on Alias really is a video game. If you know, and I wrote a significant amount of the set pieces. We took a very collaborative approach to the writing on that show.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say set piece, what does that mean to the
That means like Sydney, you know, the spy, you know, has to go in and steal something.
I see.
So the set piece begins the second she jumps out of the car or hops out of the airplane in a parachute and then breaks into the place using gadgets and defeats guards in exciting ways, and then maybe jumps out the 30-story window and dives into the pool, and, you know, that's what I mean by set pieces.
Did
usually
play,
act three and act five.
Did you play a lot of Splinter Cell?
You know what? I did play Splinter Cell. I'm not so much a stealth guy, you know, as you need to be, you know, for Splinter Cell. And, you know, I like my action COD4 style, I think. You
right.
know, run and gun is more me. I remember No One Lives Forever. I don't know if you ever played that game.
Sure.
On the PC. That was pretty great. Very akin to the tone of Alias.
Now, I want to go through and where do you see, you know, you're clearly successful in Hollywood and on television. Where do you see video games going? I mean, we've seen in the past year or so as the consoles and all of the consoles, well, with the Wii exception, you know, they're so powerful nowadays, and storytelling, you know, we saw this in the Halo trilogy where storytelling is really critical. We're seeing it with Mass Effect, and you just talked about you played BioShock last night. So where do you think it's going to go from here?
In terms of the future of gameplay and,
yeah.
and kind of narrative interaction and, yeah. you know, those types of things.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more interesting things done with character in terms of the characters that you interact with in games and, you know, a more, advanced approach to AI. I think that, you know, right now, a lot of times games potentially add complexity of narrative and, you know, depth of mythology and exposition to their games and you know, think of that as being story. Mm-hmm. But I think that we need to get to a place where a story can be more emotional around the, you know, the basic, you know, gameplay elements. And I think that BioShock, for me, is something that does such a great job of that. It builds out a very rich, deep mythology that feels relatable and puts you in, a narrative situation where you earn the reveals as you play the game. And it has moments built into it in terms of how you're manipulated by Atlas, how you can, you know, harvest or rescue the, what are their names? I can't remember.
Little Sisters.
Thank you so much. The Little Sisters. Those types of choices that you make that deepen a player's experience in the narrative. So that for me is pretty groundbreaking, and I think that the next step in that indirect gameplay is the AI component to other characters that are going to be interacting with you and how they, how you work together with them. I also think there's some amazing things that are possible in terms of transmedia storytelling and transmedia gameplay, and that's a word that we throw around to talk about our extended story for Heroes, where we take the story into comic books, onto cell phones, onto the PC, potentially into video games. Mm-hmm. There's ways that with a game that your story experience could expand beyond the game. And something I was just screwing around with this morning, which was so cool, is the the 360 voice. Is that what it is? The
yeah.
one where it makes a blog for your 360?
Yep.
Something like that is such an incredible tool if you applied it to be used for an in-world game experience. Like, you're instead of talking about your character, your performance as a player, if it talked about your performance as a character,
right.
and then started maybe kicking you information via email, cell phone, you know, other types of things, that would be a really interesting way to immerse you into deeper into a game. And I certainly believe that we'll see much more convergence where media property. Let me think about that again. Where properties will be developed for every platform at the same time.
So unilaterally, it goes out and kind of embraces all the platforms.
Exactly, so that you'll have a gameplay experience, and then, you know, as you see the movie, as you read the books, as you do all that kind of thing, the game world will be so built out, and that experience will all come to you at once, instead of a movie gets made and then the game gets made afterwards, or a game is made and then the movie. I think we're going to see a lot more properties that, you know, launch on media platforms simultaneously. Mm-hmm. to build out the game experience.
Now, as a gamer, and, you know, as you've demonstrated, you're a pretty hardcore gamer. As a gamer, that makes me nervous, because if you're at the helm, and I'm okay with that, but I'm worried that some of the other Hollywood types may get a hold of it, and it's not going to make sense. So
that's true, and you absolutely should be concerned about that, as we have all seen with licensed titles.
Right.
But I think that there is, of the people who are in charge of the business, more and more they are gamers. They're people like me who grew up, you know, with I grew up with Star Wars and Apple II, my Apple II, and you know, have been a gamer since the very beginning. So they're guys like me that have gaming in our DNA and really understand the difference between the mediums. So you know, as we approach making new content, we're thinking about ways to exploit it in the game space organically and not as just an ancillary way to generate revenue and it's pushing us to make something crappy.
Some crazy marketing tool.
Exactly.
Now, I want to talk to you because you're all about, you know, as a writer, you're all about the characters and the storylines. What for you was your favorite character or characters of the game video games of 2007?
Of 2007?
Yeah, of the past 12 months. What do you think are some? Because I've got one, and you kind of referenced it a little earlier. Like, for instance, my favorite, I think Sander Cohen is genius in BioShock.
See, and that's the thing is, I'm still not. I don't even know who that is.
Trust me. You'll know him when you get through to him.
I just got out of the freaking, you know, medical wing and into the smuggler's warehouse. I really just got deep into it last night. So I hope you didn't just kill me with some spoiler.
No, you're almost there, and I don't think it's a spoiler. But Sander Cohen for me is great. So what are some of the other, you know, some of the other games that you played where the characters where you're like, you know, this would make a good character, or this is really well done.
Well, for me, COD4 is, you know, the BioShock is pretty spectacular, but in terms of, you know, the kind of gameplay that I love and a game that really, I think, understands the power of game and narrative tricks that I'm familiar with, you know, COD4 I thought was just terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way it dropped me into that world and drove me through those experiences and, you know, killed me and then, you know, sent me off somewhere else. That, for me, is my most, you know, transcendent video game experience of this year, you know, in terms of just hooking me and pushing me forward and transporting me to this kind of compelling experience. You know, BioShock is a very different experience. BioShock is just spectacular in terms of, you know, the world they created. But in terms of, I think, using narrative that works for games, COD4 I thought was pretty spectacular, which may sound odd because it's such an action game. You know, that was really compelling for me. In terms of characters, I don't really know. What's odd is that, you know, like the trailer for Kane and Lynch, that was one of the best things I, you know, have seen in so long, and it promised so much. I was so excited to play that game, and then I, you know, game-flied it, and I was so disappointed. But, you know, it felt like that company, whoever made that, really understood creating good characters and creating a good narrative, and then they fell apart in gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the classic story. We've seen this a million times with movies, where the trailer looks great, and you go to the movie, and you're like
totally.
A half an hour in or 2 hours in, you're like, this isn't very good.
Totally. And, you know, Mass Effect.
Sure.
I like Mass Effect a lot. For me as a gamer, I don't have time to devote to that stuff anymore.
Right.
I love KOTOR. I thought it was spectacular. And I was really into it, but I just didn't have time to spend with Mass Effect, and I also think that type of you know, character interaction, it's just limited in terms of the immersion that you can get with it. There's some great kind of twists that can happen, and they do. I think BioWare, you know, more than most, really knows how to craft a good story and craft amazing dialogue and build beautiful characters. But I think they're kind of just limited by that format in terms of how they can get those characters across, that narrative across.
Now, one of the things, you know, when you've worked on the movies you've worked on and the television shows, I mean, it's passive. For us as viewers, it's passive. We sit there, you know, you're presenting us with the storyline, and you control everything. As
yeah.
a writer, do you look at some of the games you just mentioned, like BioShock and Mass Effect and so forth, and you're thinking, you know, first of all, the user's controlling, and COD4, the user's controlling the storyline, maybe not the pace or the tempo, but they kind of get to go wherever they want. I mean, I know that in Mass Effect, there's some planets that I've never seen that I'm sure they spent hours writing the backstory for.
Right.
So,
you know, that's interesting because that's a really interesting point that you bring up because, you know, the truth is, you know, the real truth in the games is that you really aren't you know, especially a story-based game like a Mass Effect or a COD4, you're on a real linear track in terms of story. You know, just because of the necessity of levels and building those story moments, and it really is what you do as a player in between those story moments that are already pre-established. There's a little bit more variety in something like Mass Effect, obviously, than there is in a COD4. But you know, I would argue that unless you're just running around in a sandbox game and screwing around and not following the mission objectives,
right?
You know, you're still locked into story.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is that was one of the, I think, kind of realizations that helped when we were talking about Lost in the early days, was really kind of thinking about Lost more like a video game and thinking about ways that we were going to be establishing tentpoles and a world for these characters to move around in, but they were still going to be on a relatively linear path, but we were going to give them, those characters, room to explore the world in the same way that a game player can explore the world. And if you think about Lost, it's totally a video game premise. You know, these ordinary people, these strangers, are dropped, you know, into this island environment. There's a freaking monster on it, and all this weird stuff is happening. And if you think of yourself as how you would approach Lost as a player, it's very similar to maybe the way some of those characters made choices. And another thing about something, the way that Lost is crafted, and you know, Heroes and Alias and these other things, is we try to come up with ways that we don't give the audience all the answers, so that there actually is a level of interactivity in terms of people trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. That really helps suck people into the experience, you know, almost as if they were, you know, playing a video game in terms of the way they're trying to figure out what's going to happen next or where a character's going to go and, you know, what these big mysteries are. I think TV and games really have so much similarity in terms of the way they parse narrative and also in terms of their production processes.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because you talk about how, you know, you kind of leave these open-ended things for the viewers to kind of come up with their own conclusions, and that's what
right,
a lot of people
exactly.
do. But I know that a lot of people were really upset at the final episode of Sopranos because they don't know what happened.
I know, and it's weird to me because, for me, it's genius.
Right.
It's absolutely genius in so many ways. That ending was freaking brilliant, because the struggle of Sopranos, you know, for me, was this guy, you know, this ordinary guy who's made these choices in his life, and the anxiety that he lives with about how those choices are going to come home to roost, that a final resolution on that story would have betrayed the thematic brilliance of the piece. So it's interesting how so many people really wanted that final, you know, comeuppance, or that clarity that he was going to get away with it, or but for me it was very much deserved that open ending. There are, you know, stories like on Alias, you know, our story came to a conclusion and we kind of had a pat ending that we needed to tie off for it, in terms of the narrative that we've been telling over 5 years. But certainly Sopranos, I think, deserve something more open-ended. And I'm not involved with Lost anymore, but, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how they tie off that story and if they're going to be following the program that we established season one.
Now, I want to move forward a little bit. You know, a lot of people, you know, I go online every night, and I'm playing online, you know, with my friends and whatnot over Xbox Live, whether it's Halo or COD4. I don't watch much television anymore. Does that worry you for somebody who works in the television industry, that a lot of, you know, maybe the younger audience or the male audience is now going to maybe Xbox Live?
I don't watch TV either, dude. That's the thing. For me, there's nothing I would rather do than play my 360.
Right.
And something has to be so special that I'll watch it. You know, Mad Men's the only show that I watched last year because I hadn't seen anything like it. I couldn't see anything like it anywhere else, and it was the only thing that was going to pull me away from playing 360 in my free time.
Right.
So I think that, you know, businesses change, and our business needs to change and adapt to the realities, and we need to find compelling ways to hook audiences and give them alternatives. And I think that's something I've been incredibly successful with on all the shows that I've worked on. For me, one of my favorite things about Heroes is the fact that so many young men watch our show.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that I wanted so bad with that show, is to get young men to watch that show. The fact that somebody is not playing COD4 because they want to watch Heroes is one of the greatest victories I've ever had in my life.
Why do you think that is? Why are they you talked about the young men? Why are they so sucked into watching Heroes as opposed to playing the gunship level in COD4?
Which is the greatest
right.
thing ever. I know. Who is it? Was it you who played it again, or E played it again?
Yeah.
You guys were talking about that?
Yeah, exactly. Played it a couple
which
times.
Which is kind of sick. I'm like, is that kind of messed up that he went back to that level where he's just slaughtering people from afar?
It's crazy.
I think it's just knowing your audience, and audiences change, and the way that people like their entertainment and what they want to see, that is something that's very fluid, and I think it's just a matter of keying into what type of entertainment your audience likes to watch. You know, we certainly season one, we, you know, designed our show to be like crack. You know, we designed the first 5 episodes of Heroes to be the kind of thing that if you watch them, there's no way you're going to stop, you know, watching the show,
right.
Hopefully for season one. So much happens, so much crazy stuff happens, and then we give you answers to things instead of holding stuff out there. I think that that's something that, I think we screwed up the pace of season two, but season one we had that, we had, and it was very much geared to hooking an audience that could easily turn off our show and jump on live and play some amazing games.
Are you also surprised? You obviously have a 360. You know, we've talked about that. Do you want to give out your gamer tag?
I have 4 360s.
You have 4?
I got the Halo 360, which I love, and I've got one in every room, including one in my living room hooked up to my projector, and which is like a 12-foot widescreen, which is pretty sick.
So you're pretty hardcore. Now, do you want to give out your gamer tag, or do you want to? How do you feel?
You know what? I have several, so I'll give one out. It's Snap Manifesto.
Snap Manifesto.
Snap Manifesto. I'll give that one out.
Okay.
I've got a few, but
that's the one people can hit you on. But are you?
They can hit me on that one, and we'll see what happens. I'm terrified about it. By the way, you guys have been talking about it.
Well, yeah. I apologize in advance for the influx because a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, I get messages all day long. But since you're online all the time, first of all, do you have a 360 at the office? Do you guys play? Do you guys
I
play?
I did. Chris? I did. I had a, this is it, first of all, this is a funny story. I had an Xbox at the office, and, you know, they had that launch, you guys had the Ground Zero, that launch event?
Yeah, out in the desert.
Back at Alias, I worked with a bunch of guys, and we were so excited about it that we got one of our PAs to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he got us all Xboxes at launch, and we were so excited. And you're supposed to be limited to how many that you could get.
Right.
But he figured out a way to take off his wristband and move it around and get back in line. And like he changed clothes, and I'll just put it out there. He found a way to crimp his arm so that it looked kind of like he had like an infirmity.
Right.
So that he could pretend that he hadn't been there before, and he ended up bringing us 6 back, and we all had them in our offices in the at launch, it did wonders for our productivity, as you can imagine. So I had mine at Heroes for all of the week, and then brought it home because I just was playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, it does get a little distracted, so let's be clear. If you happy to, you don't need to do that again. You know, you and I know each other. I'm happy to help you out. You don't have to send a PA out in the desert.
Thank you. This is kind of funny. I actually broke a lot of the Lost pilot and that show with JJ and Damon, and I was playing Project Gotham Racing as we were breaking that stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's also a great title. But
I love that.
Now, when you guys, I've been onto a few movie sets and a few TV sets. There's a lot of waiting around. Do you guys have one on the set for the crew? I mean,
I'm so glad you brought that up because it's a phase of my life that I had forgotten. I actually made a portable Xbox.
You
did. I got a beautiful Pelican hard case.
Yep.
And a little LCD TV, and I had my Xbox in there, and a bunch of other guys on the crew made them, and we would all take them to the set and hook them up. It was so dope. God, I love that thing. I actually did a couple iterations of it with better screens.
You need to send me a photo of this if you have.
I don't
one.
Even think I have one anymore. I don't think I ever took one.
Well,
I should make another one with one of these 360s.
Yeah, you should, and I can put you in touch with the hardware guys, and I'm sure they would love to take a look at this. But so you've seen the new dashboard update, right? You've seen the stuff we put up, you know, all the new stuff.
I have.
Now we've got this cool new thing called Inside Xbox, right? You've seen that, right?
No, I don't know what that is.
Well,
I'm still kind of finding my way around the dashboard. I gotta say, I've just been like, okay, where's all my stuff?
And, yeah, exactly.
Okay,
we just moved a few things around, but on the Xbox Live Blade, where it says Friends and Messages, right above it, there's this Inside Xbox link, and we're actually streaming video. You know that I'm doing like a couple of pieces each week. So what I want to do is I'm going to tell you if you'll have me. I'd love to come down and we could do an Inside Xbox from the set of Heroes when you guys get back in production.
Absolutely, of course.
So I'd love to love to come down and do that and see if we could, you know, shoot a little bit, you know, with your blessings, of course.
Oh, my God, I would love that. And you know, we had a PS3 integration on the show,
right.
Season 1, and it was only because I couldn't get a 360. Someone at Microsoft, you know, didn't call us back or something, and I put a PS3 on there. But
call me. I will make sure that
I'll
get you in touch with the
right people. I love my 360. So much.
Yeah, because we definitely need to get some, and I think the listeners will agree, we need to get some Xbox 360 action in one of the future episodes of Heroes, you know, when you guys
absolutely.
Get back in.
Absolutely. You and I talked about that at one point. It's tough because it can't be a mature rated title, I guess.
Right. You and I exchanged emails. We're thinking like maybe Halo or or what was the other? I think it was even BioShock. And you're like,
Shadowrun, I think.
Shadowrun.
Talking
we couldn't
about
get in because they yeah, you guys, you know, we have ESRB ratings and you guys have the TV ratings. Ratings always kind of get in the way of some things.
Totally.
But yeah, I need you to go through and take a look at the Inside Xbox stuff, and we'd
I will. I'm so excited about that. I love the idea of you know, new distribution channels and 360. You guys have just done such an amazing job of designing that as a platform, and you know, it's a hardcore game machine. But it also allows you to, the way you guys have done Video Marketplace, and now this new thing you're talking about just sounds fantastic. And for me, that's very exciting because, you know, as we see the business models changing and the audiences fracturing, we need new ways to reach audiences, you know, where they live and give them the kind of entertainment that they like where they like it. And I'm very excited about designing entertainment that can go out directly to consoles.
All right. I'm gonna turn it up a notch here. So when you guys get back in production, whenever we figure it out, maybe you can just write me in the background. I can have a walk-on role or something.
Maybe. But, you know, here's the thing: is that if we were back at ABC, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Right.
NBC is hardcore about that stuff.
All right.
And we've tried to do that because that's one of the things as a producer on a TV show that you do for like your kid's school when they have a benefit or something. You give away walk-on roles
right.
to raise money for your kid's school, and we can't even really do that. But you can absolutely come and hang out and, you know, hang out on the set and hopefully shoot some video and you know, whatever you want to do. If you want to bring, you know, Trixie with you
maybe would want to come down because I know he's a big fan of the show.
That'd be great. God, that guy's so smart. I love the way he was talking about Assassin's Creed the other day, which, you know, I don't really want to say anything too, you know, negative about something because obviously people work really hard, but... I think his analysis of the disparity in scores was very insightful in terms of it's so much about the way you play that game.
Right.
And it sounds like he plays it the right way, but I think he's one of the few.
Yeah.
And to have that expectation that an audience needs to play the game that way to enjoy it is it's an interesting pretty interesting of approach.
Well, we'll figure out the right time and the place for me to bring my camera guy and myself and come down and maybe shoot a couple of pieces for Inside Xbox, you know, on the set.
Absolutely, and maybe we can get something signed and, you know, you can give it away on the show.
I'd love to. Well, actually, speaking of that, we've got, you know, I've got right here sitting next to me is a signed Xbox 360 and an HD DVD player. And the first season of Heroes on HD DVD. They're here. I'm going to give them away right now. And you and I had talked about this. And the trivia question is, and this is, you have to answer this question. It is clearly a Heroes question. What company does Heroes Fathers work for? And this is going to be probably for hardcore viewers. So if you think you know what that is, send me an email, major@xbox.com, and put your guess in there. And then whenever I'm going to do a show sometime in the future, I don't know when, for the rest of the year, but send me what your guess is, and I will pull a winner out, and you'll win this cool prize. And I think your signature's on here, Jesse.
Is it? I don't think so.
I don't know. I can't.
I don't remember. I would remember. It's a 360 that's signed.
Yes. It's the actual box. It's the whole box.
Oh, I didn't sign it. All they care about is the cast anyway, dude. All they ever care about is the cast, well, the pretty people. You know, I'm just the troll that sits back here in my cage and, you know, does all the stories with all my troll buddies and you know, all the beautiful people get the accolades.
Isn't that the way it all, but you know what, I'm going to turn that around and we're going to come down and I want to put your troll friends on Inside Xbox. That's what it's all about, because I don't know if you read the story of, and I talked about this earlier in my show, about my run-in with Will Wheaton. Did you hear about that one?
No.
I was basically at Child's Play, which was the big Penny Arcade event up here, and he and I were sitting across the table from each other, twittering that we were at the table with each other when we hadn't even been introduced yet. And we were both getting excited about that. So it was kind of a geek nirvana thing. So that's the same thing. I want to go shine a flashlight on all the cool geeks that work on Heroes, because it sounds like you got a bunch of them.
Absolutely. That would be so fun. And that HD DVD set is just spectacular. It's that's such an exciting format, and I love the way Microsoft is, you know, supporting it. And you know, I've committed to HD DVD, and I hope that the industry does, and it has a long life. And I love what you guys are doing for that.
What are some of the discs you've picked up recently on HD DVD?
I just got the Bourne one yesterday, and it's sitting here. I unwrapped it, but I haven't popped it in yet.
I have my favorite one in my hand here, which is the HD DVD version of A Christmas Story.
That's cool. Extras are there?
There's actually like a documentary. There's a whole thing about the Daisy Red Rider, some trailers and things like that. But it's great. The only place I could find it was on Amazon, so I highly recommend it for the holidays because it's a funny movie.
I will. You know, I just showed my son showed him that movie on regular DVD. I'm so disappointed I didn't get the high def one.
Yeah, it's,
and of course, 300 is just totally badass in HD.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. So anyway, well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I know that I appreciate you and I have been talking about doing this for a while, and I'm glad because, frankly, you didn't have any time because you were so busy, but now it sounds like you got a little bit of time off.
I got a little bit of time. I'm going to be doing some more gaming, and maybe I'll do some more gaming with that, the gamer tag I gave out, and see who reaches out to me off that thing. And, you know, thank you so much for having me and for doing the podcast. I really love it, and I can't believe how hard you work and your dedication with that, you know. Just the way that you must be juggling your time and the amount of time and dedication you put to it is just inspiring.
Well, I appreciate that, Jesse. As you know, when it's something you really love, it doesn't feel like work. You just kind of do it, and that's I always tell people that when I meet them. I'm like, you know what?
Absolutely. That's the story of my career. I'm doing exactly what I did when I was a kid. You know, I made Super 8 movies in my backyard. That's what I did after school. And here I am. I get to do that and make a living doing it with my friends. It's spectacular.
The two things we need to figure out is we need to, you know, find out when we can come down and come on the set for Heroes to shoot some Inside Xbox stuff, and then you and I need to figure out how to work on a project together. I don't know what that is, but we got to figure it out.
I'd love to do something for you. I'd love to do something for live, because I think what you guys are doing is the future. And you know, I don't think we're going to be down. We're doing any hero stuff for a while.
Right.
So we'll be lucky if we get back into production in June. We'll see what happens.
All right, Jesse. Listen, man, I'm going to let you go. Have a great holiday, and we'll talk. Hopefully, we'll talk real soon. Are you going to CES?
I don't think so. You know what? Why do I need to go to CES when you guys put all that stuff on the Xbox or on the web?
Well,
I don't need to go and schlep around with, you know, sweaty, stinky people.
That's a good point. I can't argue with you there. So anyway, man, listen, have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, thanks a lot, Larry.
All right, so there's that was the four interviews for this week. I know it was a lot to listen to. Hopefully you and your head doesn't hurt after the TruSkill conversation.
Yeah.
And thank you to all my guests, the GripShift guys with their lovely accents, and Brian from Bungie, who doesn't have a lovely accent, and of course Jesse from – I just can't say Jesse from Heroes.
That works.
So thank you to all. So let's talk about – and good luck to all the contests, to winning the Xbox 360 signed by the team, signed by the Heroes folks. Get your eye off of it. I see you looking at it. I see you eyeing it.
There's only one. I won't take it. I'll just
this week, in addition to all the great stuff, the maps which were downloaded that E has not played with me yet. Speaking of that, have you played Griffball?
I have not played Griffball.
Have you heard about it?
I haven't even. I can just by the name, I can guess what it is, but I haven't played it.
So we talked about it. You didn't hear the interview, but Brian talked about it from Bungie was talking about it in the interview. And so if you missed it, you should go back and listen to it. But basically, it's Bernie from Rooster Teeth,
right?
Designed this cool game type where it's kind of like football / soccer / rugby,
right?
And
with the soccer ball?
No.
Okay.
It's, you know what? I'll share it out. It's on my Bungie share. You can go out and pull it down.
Okay.
So. I mean, I'm sure it'll be up as a Bungie favorite. So hopefully we'll play that. But we want to talk about the NPD numbers. And NPD, for those of you new to this show or maybe new to gaming, NPD is a measurement organization. And, well, I'll let E describe it because he's got all the information in front of him. Go ahead and...
Well, so what NPD does is they track retail sales in the United States.
Right.
It doesn't completely track things because there are a number of retailers whose numbers they don't have access to. They don't track Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
They don't track Costco. I don't remember the exact number, and they may hate me if I get this wrong, but they're able to track like 60-70% of U.S. retail sales, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers aren't exact, but they're great for watching trends and, for kind of estimating how, Title 1 is doing compared to Title 2 or Platform A compared to Platform B.
Right.
So,
that said,
the November numbers are out. And both for console sales and for software sales. Console sales, I think they're probably, pretty close to what I expected, at least. I don't know about you. DS Lite kicked ass. 1.5 million sold.
And I always love, whenever these numbers come out, usually Kotaku, is it Kotaku or Joystick or somebody, has the picture of Iwatani-san and with the money coming out of his mouth. that's always a good one.
Printing money,
basically.
There's so many different ways you can spin this. So what always happens on the day this comes out is the actual press release comes out.
Right.
And then, we, of course, have our spin on it.
Right.
Sony has
theirs.
Each of
the manufacturers says, hey, we won. They start waving the banner saying, hey, we won.
Right. And you can... there are things that are good for everybody
right
in here. So, raw numbers, DS Lite kicked ass. We sold 981,000.
The Wii, not Wii.
Right. WII.
Right.
Xbox 360, 770,000 sold, which I think I read somewhere was our second biggest month ever.
Wow. Great stuff.
PSP, the new PSP 2000
Lite.
Or whatever.
The PSP Lite.
I don't even remember the actual name of it, but
right.
The newer PSP.
This is the one they announced at... at E3 this year.
Yeah. 567K. PS2, 496K. And PS3, 466.
Okay.
So everyone's, got their own spin. Nintendo obviously did great.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox 360 did great. And Sony's spin is kind of, you put the PlayStations together.
Yeah, you kind of bunch everything together. PlayStation hardware, I think, is what they say.
Yeah. The interesting thing is you look at it from a month to month. Pretty much everyone went up huge.
Right.
November, of course, huge retail month. December is going to be bigger. Consoles are flying off the shelves, regardless of which console you're looking for. Now, software sales is where it gets really interesting. The number one seller for the month of November.
Number one!
Call of Duty 4 on 360. Over 1.5 million copies sold just in November.
That's amazing. Nice work, Infinity Ward.
Yeah. They outsold Super Mario Galaxy. SMG sold 1.1 million. Number three, Assassin's Creed on 360, 980,000 copies just on 360. And then I'm not going to read the whole list. You can
right
work your way down. There's actually, 1, 2, four 360 games made the top 10. Call of Duty 4, first place. Assassin's Creed, third place. Mass Effect in sixth. Mm-hmm. And Halo 3 in ninth place, still selling like crazy. They're over, what'd they say, over 5 million copies worldwide now of Halo 3 sold?
Yeah, that's, it's crazy. Crazy, crazy numbers.
So it's just, I mean, I gotta say, it's nice to see some of those games do well, because they're games that deserve to do well.
Right.
It's,
I mean, where's Mass Effect in there? Did I sleep through you mentioning that?
Yes, you did. Number six, 473,000 copies in November. So, it's always interesting, too, to look at, you know, games that are available on multiple platforms, like how Assassin's Creed did on 360 as opposed to PS3, mm-hmm. or Guitar Hero on one platform, you know, versus another, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, Assassin's Creed, like I said earlier, I finally finished it. It deserves to be selling like crazy. They just announced...
Finally, because it's a long game, or because you just took a while to finish it?
I just took a while to finish it. Right. They just announced they sold 2.5 million copies, which, if you enjoyed it, is great, because obviously it was set up for a sequel. It's supposed to be a trilogy.
Right.
I don't think there's any question there will be another Assassin's Creed game.
That was good stuff.
So, I had a great time finishing that.
I still have that sitting there. You know, I'm probably about a third of the way into that. Mass Effect, well, we've talked extensively about that. You know, the Halo maps are out, so we're seeing a huge surge of people coming back to Halo.
The thing I have to decide, I'm definitely going to play some Halo. I always mix in some Halo with what else I'm playing. But my next non-Halo game, am I going to go straight into COD 4, or am I going to backtrack and finish Bioshock first?
Bioshock. You have to do Bioshock.
But I really want to get into Call of Duty 4, too. I mean, you're right, but...
What have you been doing? How did I finish... I finished both Bioshock and COD 4 ahead of you. How did that happen?
Well, Bioshock, I was almost done.
Right.
The day I got my copy of Halo 3. I dropped everything to finish
Halo 3 as quickly
as possible.
That's right.
Because it was so hard to avoid the spoilers even before it was out.
Right.
Both on the internet and, you know, making sure that no one I know at Bungie accidentally said something that gave me a hint.
Right.
So once I had my hands on a copy of Halo, I wanted to finish campaign.
You burned through in like 3 days, right? Or 2 days?
One or 2 days. I don't remember exactly. Right. I finished it as quickly as I could without speed racing it. I wanted to enjoy it.
Right.
So I played it heroic solo as quickly as possible. And then I went back later. I did the legendary co-op thing. I've been playing a bunch of multiplayer.
So okay. I see. Okay. There it goes.
And plus, we don't all have the time you do to play things like, you know, Avatar for 2 minutes and other things.
That was a complete accident.
No, it was...
I told you it was an accident. No. I turned away from the screen, I was hitting B accidentally, and all of a sudden 1,000 points were on my gamer card.
So, real quick divergence here. One of the guys who works for me, mm-hmm. about a week ago, he starts giving me crap about how he's going to catch me over the holiday, gamer score-wise. And he was, at the time, I don't know, 5,000 or 6,000 behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, 1,000 gamer score pop up on his gamer card the next day. Yeah, he rented Avatar. And so I'm making fun of him in front of a bunch of people for having to resort to games like that. And I'm looking at the games he's choosing yesterday. And yeah, he's playing some games that you might consider cheap gamer score if you're trying to catch somebody.
He's being strategic about his choices.
Right. And then I notice, when I know for a fact he's in a meeting working on something important, all of a sudden I see him log in playing Meet the Robinsons.
He's got his kids working on it?
He's got his kids earning gamer score for him
labor.
Trying to catch me. Yes. And I don't know if he's paying them or not. I accused him of, like, you know, letting them out of chores or giving them cash for gamer score.
Right.
I don't know what the deal is.
That's a hell of a way to earn your allowance.
Yeah, but he's cheating. There's no doubt about it. So, and I know he's listening, so I'm calling him out
right now.
He's still not going to catch me. What's your gamer score, by the way?
I don't know. Let's take a look.
Are you still in the 14s?
I think so. Yeah, so this is like, 14.746.
Okay. I'm a little over 2,000 ahead of you. So,
And that's, you know, the 14.746. It's like, you know, what is it, Hank Aaron and the home runs. I got to put an asterisk next to that because there's 1,000 from Avatar.
Right. Well, you're now the person on the My Xbox page on Xbox.com.
Right.
You know, in the bottom right-hand corner, you set it to show who by default it's going to compare you to.
That's right.
You're now my default.
And likewise,
you've
always so we're staying in touch with each other on that. The what else do we have to talk about here? You want to talk about the what HD DVDs you bought? Before we get into Inside Xbox, Name the Game and whatnot.
So I had meant to place a big order at Amazon, and it was one of those things where I think I have a whole bunch of things sitting in my shopping cart, and I forgot to actually, you know, click order. So I happened to go to Best Buy yesterday.
You went without me? And
Paul Bunyan came and grabbed me.
Oh,
and
you guys. Usually we do that together around the holiday. Go ahead.
You're not in our building anymore.
It doesn't matter.
Us.
I'm on IM. You call me. I can reach out
all the way over here.
We would have thrown everybody in the car. Go ahead. So you go to Best Buy.
Anyways, go to Best Buy. I just happened to stumble across Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz in HD DVD.
Oh, I have both of those.
They're both great movies, but yeah. I didn't have them in HD.
Right.
So I picked those both up in HD. I wanted Harry Potter in HD DVD. But they were out. They had the standalone movies, but they didn't have like
the box set
of 1 through 5, which is what I want.
Right.
So I passed on that. I need to order that. There, I need the Blade Runner.
That's not coming out yet till the 15th, I think.
Oh, I thought it came out this week. Is that next week?
I think it's next week.
Okay, because I mean, we've talked about that before. I already have 2 or 3 different copies of Blade Runner, but Blade Runner in HD, I gotta have it. I gotta have it. The other one that's killing me. Battlestar Galactica Season 1.
Yeah.
I already have it on DVD. I really want it on HD DVD. Yeah.
We're going to see what happens down at CES this year, next month, for HD DVD. That ought to be some interesting time. We're going to move ahead here. We're going to do Name the Game. So is that all right, E?
Works for me.
Okay. Here's the Name the Game from last week. All right, that was Switchball, so congratulations to Om13T. Congratulations. You grabbed yourself one of these cool... Let me open it up here.
I want that.
No, you can get away from my stuff. You're going to get yourself one of these cool little guys, which is the Air Force X3...
Turtle Beach headset,
which has chat and wireless game audio all in one. I'll send that off to you, so you'll have that before the... before the holiday season, and there we go. So I'm just moving all my things back here. Apologies for not being ready for that. And then we'll get... Stop it. You're eyeing my stuff again.
I'm just going to back my car up to your office and start loading.
So we're going to go ahead and we're going to roll...
Wait,
the...
What is this?
I'll tell you about that in a second.
This is disturbing.
Hold on a second. We got to play we got to play the Name the Game for this week. All right, there you go. That's the Name the Game for this week. Send an email to major@xbox.com with your guess. Include your gamer tag. And E is just... Oh, stop. Just stop, okay? Okay, stop. Stop. We're recording here.
I think I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Oh, God. major@xbox.com if you think you know what that is. And good luck and congratulations. I don't know when we're gonna award the winner for that, because I don't know when the next show is. I have no idea.
We should record it New Year's Eve.
No idea when the next show is. So,
in other words, you're not coming to the party.
No, I didn't say that. If I go, I'm not going to I'm going to be the geek at the party with all my equipment. Come on.
Think of who usually
wait
comes
minute,
to my parties.
Minute,
it's going to be
wait
you,
minute.
Me.
Wait a minute.
Some
wait.
People from Bungie.
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
We gonna fry Twinkies?
If I fry Twinkies, will you come over? If you come to the New Year's party, I will fry Twinkies.
God. Maybe I should bring Mars bars this time, since I brought Snickers last time.
Okay, that'll work.
That was just wrong.
That'll work.
All right, so the next segment we do is we kind of get into the home stretch of the show here is Xbox 101. So when we do that, we have a nice little intro for E.
Roll funky.
Xbox 101, this time with E and Major Nelson.
Xbox 101 for this week.
Yes.
This is something we've actually covered a while ago, but we have so many new listeners, and this is a pretty good one, so we're going to talk about it again. And the subject is upscaling of standard DVDs.
Yep.
The Xbox 360 can operate as an upscaling DVD player, and essentially what that means is on a DVD is basically all the content you need to deliver a 480p picture, a very good but not high-def picture. Upscaling is basically being smart about the data that's already there and interpolating in additional data to make it look better than it would normally. So it's not – you can't take SD content and make it truly high-def, but you can make it look better than it would if you didn't do upscaling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 360 can upscale. However, there's a catch. For legal reasons, we can only upscale on certain kinds of connections. So,
meaning that it's not like we can't do it. It's because that's what the industry has dictated we can do.
So when you sign the agreement that lets you have access to all the patents that you need to play back a DVD, You have to sign a contract agreeing to certain things. One of those agreements is you won't upscale content unless it's over a certain type of connection.
Got it.
So the connections we can upscale content over are VGA and HDMI.
Mm-hmm.
So all Xbox 360s have access to VGA as an output option. All you need to do is go to your favorite Xbox retailer and buy the VGA audio-video cable.
Got it.
And then connect up. Most LCDs have a VGA connector you can use. A lot of DLPs and even some CRTs have VGA connections. Or if you have one of the newer Xbox 360s and you have an HDMI output, we can also upscale over that if you're using that connection.
Great.
And you don't have to do anything. Just connect up, away you go, and boom, your old standard DVDs will look better than they did before. Ta-da!
According to E.
No, according to other people, too.
Okay. So thank you, E, for that Xbox One on, which is heavy on the technical side, which is fine. But this is again, we have new users, and I'm sure people are going to be downloading this and shows in the past once they unwrap their Xbox 360 from under the Christmas tree or Hanukkah bush or Kwanzaa tree or whatever they celebrate.
And I would think that, you know, they plug their Xbox in, they see you on Inside Xbox,
they're
immediately going to go and listen to every podcast we've ever done.
I don't talk about the podcasts on Inside Xbox. No, although there has been a recommendation, and I haven't talked to you about this.
Okay.
There was a suggestion. Somebody on the team said, well, why don't, when you bring guests in, record part of what it's like to record a podcast and put that up as Inside Xbox, kind of like they do with Howard Stern or Imus or some of those shows?
Mm-hmm.
What do you
Howard,
think of that?
Imus,
bro, what do you think of that? Yeah.
Sure.
So we could have cameras all around and people could... I would have to clean up the office.
I mean, you have the big glass windows, kind of like the Today Show.
Right.
We could get a crowd outside the window.
And then security would be here in mere moments, and there'd be an issue.
That's a good point.
So that's kind of the I'm sorry, we talked about it. I don't even know how we got here. I don't know what happened there.
Gee, we're rambling again.
Rambling
Imagine
again.
That.
I'm just totally distracted. I'm over at IMDb, and I'm still looking at Will Wheaton's bio, you know, in addition to Stand By Me and all the rest of those.
He's been in a lot of things.
He was on a Love Boat episode.
What?
Yeah.
No. Are you serious?
Yeah, where is it? It's like...
You're just making this up.
No, I'm not. I'm telling you. It was actually a...
He was in The Last Starfighter?
I'm just telling you. Will, I got to have you on to talk about this. He was in The Love Boat, The Next Wave in 1998, so...
Oh, that's not The Love Boat.
Well, it's still Love Boat, so... I got to get him on. We got to talk about this.
Ooh, The Outer Limits.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk about
this. Okay, there's quite a few shows there I've never heard of.
So, all right, so we're gonna get ready. We're wrapping up the show here. This may or may not be the last show of the year.
It will not be the last show. I will get you deep fried Twinkies.
Yeah, but even it doesn't matter. Even if we record that show, I'm not going to air it until the next day. So it could be the last show of 2007.
Okay, fine. If you're going to get technical on me.
Says the man in charge of operations.
Yeah, but that's different.
It always
is. That's actual work. This is just come over and hang out with Major and make fun of him.
Do you have any gadgets you want to talk about? I mean, we really shouldn't even be doing any gadget discussion because we're going to CES, and that's gadget mecca.
Well, should we do a little, you know, Christmas recommendations for the gadget geek you have to shop for?
Sure.
So
well, the problem is that all the guys that want the gadgets listen to the show, the wives or the loved ones or the companions
that's
or not.
That's true. We could give them suggestions on things to give to. So here's a good one.
Okay.
So I'm always stuck trying to figure out what to get my dad.
Right.
Finally, this year, I figured out what I'm getting him. They now have out. So there have been digital photo frames for a while. And, you know, they were kind of small and they were a hassle to get pictures into and didn't really seem to hit that sweet spot yet. There are now digital photo frames with like 7 to 10 inch screens with built-in Wi-Fi that will connect up to an RSS feed or something like Flickr and automatically download and rotate photos. So, and I can say this because there's no chance my dad is listening to this. For Christmas,
where do I get one of these?
I'll show you later. For Christmas, I'm getting my dad a Wi-Fi photo frame. I'm going to create a set on my Flickr account of pictures of my son, his grandson, and then he'll unwrap it. I'll turn it on. It'll connect up. Boom. All I have to do is go to Flickr when I take new pictures, drop it in there. New photo appears on Grandpa's desk.
So I wonder if I can tag photos on Flickr and have them show up in your dad's thing.
No. Oh, no. No, no, no. Yeah. It's going to be going to my Flickr feed.
Yeah, I'm actually troubled to figure out what I'm going to get my wife for the holiday. You know, when you get for the partner in your life, the companion, the wife, it's tough because, you know, she doesn't want electronic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, girls generally, and I know that generally speaking, girls don't like gadgets. Sure, there's some out there that do.
But, yes. And, yeah, I can see that with, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out what to get my wife because she's a tough one to buy.
A digital photo frame with pictures of you. She can take it with her. Yeah, that's not going to work.
That's interesting.
That's not going
to
work.
What's interesting is my wife, generally speaking, we don't like to celebrate the holiday until after.
Okay.
Because she doesn't, it's just like, oh, we talked about this at for Valentine's Day. She's like, don't buy me flowers then. Wait till, you know, a month or two later when they're cheaper and it means more because somebody didn't tell you to do it. The calendar didn't say go buy them.
But you still have to recognize the holiday. That's not an, you're not going to be able to get away with ignoring Valentine's Day.
I get a pass.
What?
Yeah, I get a pass.
Okay. So that's differently than it's ever worked for me then.
Well, I'm just telling you, I'll get a pass. So it's going to be an interesting holiday this season. You know, I'll be online playing a bunch of games and
I have a stack of things I intend to play between now and New Year's.
You know what I need to put up is I need to put a link up to all the cool Halo stuff that I've got in my office. Some of the great ideas we're talking about gifts.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the belt buckles and the Meebos.
I didn't even know half this stuff existed.
Yeah, it's all down. Some of it's in the. This is just some of it. Most of it's down in the studio.
Yeah.
So we're gonna wrap it up now, Ian, unless you have anything else to do, and maybe or maybe not. This could be the last show of the year. It depends how I feel. If I feel like kicking one out over the next 2 weeks, I will.
There you go.
I'm still trying to figure out, by the way, about Marketplace.
Yeah.
I think Lithion and I have come up with an idea of what we're gonna do to put all that stuff on the blog, but kind of put it off to one side. Oh, so
you can actually blog again?
So I can blog again.
Cool.
I miss blogging as opposed to just posting Marketplace stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea.
So I think we may have a solution. He's going to work on it over the holiday because he'll have some extra time. But all right, we're going to wrap it up now. I just want to thank our friends all year long from CentureCom.net for providing secured and assured hosting environment, which has really been helpful for a fantastic year of shows. And wouldn't be anything without also the good friends at CashFly who serve up this show and the videos that I put up there and PDF files and damn near anything else that I'll put up there. So thank you for all your help this year. It's been a good year. May have another show, may not.
Let's see. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas.
Keep going.
Blessed Winter Solstice.
Oh, boy.
Kwanzaa.
Keep going.
Et cetera, et cetera. Enjoy the holiday of your choice. If you choose not to celebrate, go get some gamer score.
Right. Go up and get some gamer score and see if you can beat E. And maybe you can finish Bioshock before E does because he's not making any progress in area.
Fine. I will finish Bioshock before the year is out. Happy?
Send E a message if you have any tips on how he can finish Bioshock. So. We'll talk to you next time. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Is this going to be the last show of 2007?
This is the last after show.
This could be the last one airing.
This could be the last after show of 2007.
I may not see you until New Year's.
Right, because you're actually leaving the area, right?
I am. I'm here, then I'm gone, then I'm back, then I'm gone.
I have this. I'm going to be playing this next week. I'm holding up my copy of an HD DVD version of A Christmas Story.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
This is fantastic.
It's hilarious. I'm not much for the, you know, the classic traditional Miracle on 34th Street kind of thing.
Well, this is.
But I love that movie.
This is replacing that, and It's a Wonderful Life. I read an article someplace on this about how this is like the new, for our generation, this is the classic.
Are you and I in the same generation? I guess we kind of are.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's so if you haven't, of course, TBS runs it a billion times.
Yes. But it's just funny. And I mean, getting his tongue stuck to the pole. Do we have to give spoiler warnings on?
You know, I learned how they did that. I was listening to the director's truck. Can I tell you?
Oh, yeah.
So the way they did that was there was a tiny hole in the pole and they had a compressor sucking air in. So that when the actor went up to it, he put his tongue on it and it pulled it in.
It there.
So that when he pulled it back a little bit, it stuck. It stuck. It quote-unquote stuck. So that's how they did that.
Nice.
Yeah, the director's track, the alternative track in the on that is pretty funny.
That I may give a couple HD DVD players as Christmas gifts.
Really?
So I'm thinking about it.
That's hot.
I know some people who really want them. Hi, Trixie.
Trixie's walking
by. Took me a minute to realize who that was. You've got that light right there is shining up on the blinds.
Right, she can't see.
I was like, someone's waving. Who? Oh, Trixie.
Yeah, she saw us recording and she ran away.
Yeah. So yeah, I think they're good gifts. And
if you have a 360.
Yeah. Well, pretty much everyone I know has a 360.
I was thinking of buying one for my mom because when she was up here in August. You know, I don't know. I think I told you this. They were completely transfixed on the Planet Earth series.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I have talked extensively about that. But I want to talk about my mom for a second. I don't know if I've told you this, but the amount of mail I've been getting from her over the past 2 or 3 weeks, email, has just been, like, quadrupled.
Okay.
She's decided, I think I need to go back down to her house and up on her email client, remove the forward button. Because I'm like, Mom, this is spam.
Oh.
So I thought you'd be interested, dear.
A good friend of mine who I've played a lot of Halo with the other day forwarded me one of those. Forward this mail to everyone you know, and Microsoft will pay you $234 for the first and $214 for the second.
Yeah.
And, I couldn't believe she forwarded that to me.
Yeah, let's just be clear. That's not what we're doing. Okay?
No.
You know, you're not going to – Bill Gates is not going to come over to your house and give you – $100 if you forward it on. So just delete.
Yeah.
If any of it says, please forward this on, stop reading right there and press delete.
Delete.
That's what you can do to help save the internet, please.
Absolutely.
Give more bandwidth for your Halo and Call of Duty 4 matches.
Yes, exactly. There you go. That's a good way to look at it.
So please, we should start a campaign to help save the internet because this is just goofy.
So HD DVDs, good gifts. Roombas, good gifts.
Oh, that's right.
I
still, you know, every time I go into like Bed Bath & Beyond or wherever, I kind of look at it, so I'm like.
I love mine. The only problem I have, and this isn't the Roomba's fault, this is Sedona's fault.
Your dog.
She's half German Shepherd.
Right.
Very long-haired, sheds a lot in the winter. I have to clean the Roomba basically every day.
Really?
It literally fills up every day.
Yeah, but that's just cleaning the Roomba.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, I wish I could leave it unattended for longer, and if it was just Nettie and the cats, I'd be fine, but Sedona sheds a dog a day.
Right.
So I literally, like, I clean it either in the morning or when I get home.
Right.
But it does a great job. It gets rid of the dog tumbleweeds.
Yeah, we'll have to see what the gadgets are. I just may wait till after holiday and scoop up some holiday, you know, deals.
I won't do Black Friday. I won't go shopping the day after Christmas. I do all my Christmas shopping online.
Yeah, I actually read an article or saw a study that was done that said, like, people in Seattle, I think it was Seattle, San Francisco, and I think it was Boston, they're 46% more likely or some ridiculous amount to buy online.
So a West Coast thing, maybe?
We're just in the tech area. Seattle is a tech area. Yeah, San Francisco is a tech area.
It's so much easier to do that and next day, era, you know, second day, whatever.
I don't know.
I don't want to fight the crowds.
I don't buy much. You know, funny, for all that I do on the internet, I don't buy much online. I don't know why. I like to look at it
And
there are some things I don't like to buy online. Like, I don't buy clothes online generally, unless it's like, oh, I need one more pair of jeans, and I've been wearing the same pair forever, so I know what I need.
But guys, generally speaking, guys hate clothes shopping.
Right. But for DVDs, for computer stuff.
Well, yeah, computer stuff, you know, when hitting Newegg is a no-brainer.
And I mean, all my movies come from Amazon. I buy a lot of books online. I also still go to bookstores a ton, and I'll walk out. You know, if I go into a bookstore, I probably come out with $100 worth of stuff at least.
Speaking of that, can we talk about that for a second?
Books?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have to get that Kindle away from Trixie.
She's in love with her Kindle.
She bought one of the first people to buy one of the Kindles from Amazon, and she is just, it like never leaves her side.
Yeah. I'm not ready to read my books electronically yet. I've done it before. I used to read some stuff on an old pocket PC. I tried out Trixie's Kindle, and it just, for me personally, nothing against the Kindle, but it just, it's missing something.
Here's what I would like.
I didn't click with it.
I think it's good for books, which are just standard text on, but I like my magazines and my periodicals. I like to have an 8.5 by 11 or whatever the right size is, full color.
See, periodicals, newspapers, that kind of thing.
Right.
Totally, I would use a Kindle for something like that. But books? See, for me, books are one of those few things that I collect.
Right.
I don't sell books. I don't give books away. When I buy a book, it goes on my shelf. And
right.
When I run out of shelves, I build more shelves.
Right.
And that's just, I grew up that way in a house that was full of books. And I've always had a huge book collection. And I'm just not ready to not have books like that.
Yeah.
There's something for me about, like, one of the places I'm going on vacation. I'm going to be taking, you know, I'll take the 360 and some games. I'm also going to take a big stack of books, and I'll probably read in the course of a week, you know, 5 or 6 books.
I don't know. I look at the Kindle. I was thinking about getting one of those for my wife because she travels a lot, and I just, she doesn't like that. She likes the feel of the book. And I'm like, well, you can put like 100 books on there. And
yeah, it's just, I think it's one of those things where it's just going to take people a while to get used to it.
Right. I want a color. I love the screen. I think the screen is really nifty, that inky kind of thing.
See, what I didn't like is the way it kind of flashes when you turn the page.
Right. It kind of like refreshes. It's a refresh thing.
I didn't like that. That was too distracting for me.
You actually were like...
I do. I mean, there's something about, hey, do it electronically. Don't kill the trees. I mean, there's some good reasons to do it that way. And hey, the books are cheaper that way because you're not paying for production and the shipping of the books around and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not ready to go there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe the next version. It's always, the second version is always around the corner, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sure if it's successful, there will be, you know, follow-ups. E-books have never really taken off yet. There are a bunch of e-book readers on the market. Sony's had one. There's some third-party ones. Right. I'm sure there will be Kindle V2 and competition.
All right, that's it. We're going to wrap it up now, and we'll talk to you when we talk to you, because I don't know when that's going to be.
Come over for New Year's. Bring the gear. Well, we could do a roundtable with the random people who are going to be at my house.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. All right, we'll talk to you next time. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. Bye-bye.